stop us, but they can't.
Pa-pa-pam.
Yeah, I gotta say,
we're in the pipe. Five by five.
I'm feeling it.
Welcome to the Interracial Drawn Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by one very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. What's going on, dude?
Like I said, I'm feeling it. We're feeling it.
I'm not feeling anything these days, quite frankly. I feel like there's an pox on our house or something.
Well,
I'm trying
don't,
to...
Don't blame the... We'll get to that. We'll get to the metrograde that continues.
It's in fucking ridiculous.
This household, but I feel like the podcast.
We're in the pipe. Bye.
Sounds good. Hopefully the audience agrees.
You know, at least 14 people do.
And shout out to all of them. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. And you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can just go right to our website, interracialjohn.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope. And that's at Interracial John, again, J-A-W-N. And we love feedback.
We do.
We really, really do. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And if it's 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air. And you can send us an email, interracialjohn@gmail.com. And you can leave us a voicemail. Just dial 657-JOHNERS. If it's under 3 minutes, we will play it here on the air. Shout out to Rod and Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips for our official feedback rules.
Nice. And we do have a 5-star review.
Uh-oh.
Ain't got shit.
Five stars. All right.
I like the addition of the laser fingers.
Boom, 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 boom.
That's kind of nice. Had like a little ring my bell, you know, like the pilot. Yeah. Boom,
yeah.
Boom.
I love that song.
So do I. You know, and this is really tangential, but like the actual disco version of that song is like 11 minutes long.
Oh, it's so long.
And at the end, it just has this fucking boom. Like, yeah, they just going jam loop. It out, boom. Dude.
Yeah, like over and over.
We should have
so
just
good.
Pulled it up while
let's,
I'm doing this.
Let's not do that.
5-star review. Love, honestly, and activism by Philly Jim.
Thank you,
Philly
Jim.
I never leave reviews for things, but after listening to the 100th episode of The John, I had to. Thank you. Leslie and Drew are amazing, smart, funny, loving, brilliant, inspiring, incredible. Not only do I learn a ton from every episode, I have a great time doing it. After only discovering this podcast a few months ago, I've now gone back and listened to almost every episode. If you want a great quality podcast with two wonderful hosts, This John's for you.
Oh, This John's for you. I love it.
Thanks
so much,
Jen.
Billy Jen.
Five
Shout
stars.
Out to you.
This John, you know, we appreciate it.
Yes,
thank
we
you kindly.
Really, really do.
That's awesome.
That it?
That's the only review we had this week.
Okay.
But thank you.
What's this other one that's here? That's something else?
Oh, like I said, you know, oh, wait a second. You're
so, what's going on here?
I'm sorry.
Already? Every week with you.
We gotta call that like the Drew. Like opening up with like a review from like 7 months ago. So like again, like just most helpful. I understand that's the default setting, but I like to see most recent because I forget to toggle reviews to recent. But
so you missed this one? Is that what you're saying?
About 4 months ago. Gourmet Goober.
Hey, Gourmet Goober.
One of my favorite shows. I've been listening to The Interracial John for a while now, and I love this show. The hosts at Leslie Mack and Very White Guy do a great job of breaking down the issues of the day. Their smart and witty banter is really refreshing to listen to. Plus, their Cooking John segments on Periscope is amazing. Ooh, sad, John.
We haven't done that in a long time. It's terrible.
Where's my
wah-wah? We should get back on that.
We should. You know what?
I like doing it.
It was fun for you and me. It was kind of nice. We got to like plan a meal, put our like shopping list together, and it was nice. And frequently, we would do the test.
Yeah, we get to eat it twice. Usually, we eat it one time for me to be like, how are we going to do it?
I ain't gonna lie.
We should do ahead of time and do it on the air. Yeah, it was fun.
It was good.
It was a good time. The food was always
it was good for home cooking.
Yeah. You know? Good for home cooking.
And, you know, and I don't want to say like I underestimate home cooking, but whenever we prepare food at home a lot, A, I feel healthier. B, my energy is much, much better.
C, we have way more money.
No, save so much money. And C, like, for real, like, I don't know about my, maybe it's my age, but like my sensitivity to like, I don't know, like crappy food or like cross contamination or
whatever. My allergies have gotten worse too.
Yeah. Just, we go out eat and I feel like
I'm like
50-50, one of us is getting sick.
Sick, yeah.
And it's like, that's not, what the hell? If we cook at home, I never get sick. Mm-hmm. We cook at home, we never have an issue.
That's true.
You know how much butter you're putting in shit? Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Well, but, we do have an email that we got. The title of it is Temecula.
Oh, Jesus. It's from Katisha. I can tell. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Hey, Leslie and Drew. I was just sitting at my desk staring at numbers and spreadsheets, enjoying the 100th episode of The John, when I heard my name being called out. Dang.
Oh, snap.
I didn't know a nerd like me would ever be involved in podcast beef, but I have to admit, I like having some cred in these podcast streets. Outstanding WC. When we meet in Temecula, can we go out for brunch too? I went to Temecula and brunch with my arch nemesis. Sounds like the beginning of a great story.
It does. It's like a headline.
Very good. Can I just say that I Need You to Survive is my favorite gospel song. I was brought up Baptist, but I haven't been to church in years because I can't deal with the homophobia and sexism. But hearing that song feeds my soul in a way that 3 hours in church on Sunday never could. Amazing show as always. Looking forward to the next 100. Love, Katisha, aerospace engineer and arch nemesis of outstanding WC.
She said arch nemesis.
Arch nemesis.
You know what I fucking love is that, like, honestly, and I'm just going to be like a little like my own, like, it's not ego, but one of the things that I enjoy about the podcast that I listen to, like Chris and Rod and, you know, Nick Jew and like BD Jackson, folks, is engaging with them, like talking to them about their podcast, like on Twitter and other mediums. And I enjoy that. So I've always sort of like, for the John, I thought like, not like I wanted that, but like, you know, like that was something like, oh, I like it when people engage with us in various ways about the show. That's fun to me. So that two listeners have like a quasi like John beef that like doesn't, and, like, they don't know each other other than through listening to our show. That cracks me up. I love it.
That's great. And I also want to give a shout out to Ashley K from the TBGWT Facebook group. She messaged me today and said, "Hey, Leslie, I'm so happy to have found you in the TBGWT Facebook group. I love the interracial John, and you and Drew are the interracial couple my husband and I strive to be." Smiley face. Okay. "Thank you for all you do. Please pass my gratitude along to Drew as well." So shout out to you, Ashley, and thanks for listening.
Okay. Well, as to the couple you strive to be, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, because this is the time in the show where we talk about all the fuck shit that happened to us this week. And boy, do we have a lot of fuck shit this week.
Careful what you... What's that other phrase go? Careful what you ask for, what you wish for.
What you wish for, yeah.
You know.
You just might get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. So...
You want to talk about our shits?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess.
I feel like, what's that Billy Idol song? White Wedding. White Wedding.
Yes.
And I love my family. If you're listening, we love you. We love you.
Y'all.
We love you.
Yes.
We did see that one of your friends was black. We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
In the bridal party, too.
So we didn't even talk about this. We get to the wedding, to the church. So somebody from Drew's family got married. We went to Wisconsin for the weekend to go to the wedding.
It was like, for real, like, it was in the area, like, I know this area, like Lake Geneva and this and that. Like, I've been around there. Yeah. They're into like fish boils and shit.
Oh,
like,
God.
It's like, there's like white. And then like when you get to the Midwest, it's like, you're pretty white. It's like, there's like some areas of like really white. And then you can get like pockets of like, wow, that's really white.
Yeah.
And this was like one of those like, whoa, this is out in the middle of nowhere. And it's like country club, like super rich, like enclave, like on a lake, like
it's weird.
White. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we got to the church though, we get there, we're sitting down and another black girl walked in. She caught eyes with me immediately. We were like, "Sure, show 'em. What's up, girl?"
There's only two black folk in the entire place.
Three with the person in the bridal party.
Okay.
But yeah. So we did get to spend the weekend with your family, mom, and my only younger sibling, young.
Yeah. I see, you know, you're gonna lost note, but we were at the service, the church?
Yeah.
It was a Catholic service and it was like,
I told you. That's why when your brother was like, "It's going to be like 2 hours." I was like, "No, not a Catholic mass. Well, we don't play first reading, second reading, gospel, homily. Let's get the fuck out of here."
Yeah,
like, nobody's trying to sit around anywhere. We got things to do.
Build a duck. Build your relationship as a duck.
That was, or a duck, theme. Whichever.
Yeah, depending on your hearing. But so I don't, like, you know that phrase, like, not all squares are rectangles, or like, you know, like some rectangles are squares, but not all squares are rectangles. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know that one.
So I think, like, not all Celtic crosses are white nationalist supremacists.
Okay.
Right? But, like, all white nationalists with Celtic crosses. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a high crossover of those two Venn
diagrams.
Yeah. And so there's a young woman, you know, I would say, like, on first glance wouldn't be like, you know, like somebody can like look at somebody like, ooh, this is not my kind of white people. Like, I don't know what this room is, but like there's
that's not it.
Yeah, this ain't my kind of white people.
Oh, like
room.
The dispensary you went to.
Oh my God.
These are definitely not our kind of white people.
Listen. So anyway, we're sitting there and she didn't give off that like not my kind of white people vibe. Like it didn't have this like,
yeah.
Like sometimes you go into Walmart and like you feel something like in the back of your neck.
She looked like that girl Lake Bell, you know that
yeah,
actress?
Yeah, totally didn't normal. She was right. But smack right between the shoulder blades.
Celtic cross.
Big Celtic cross.
Right. She might be Celtic.
I don't think it was racist, but you know, I don't know. I feel like there's a point now in time where like the Celtic cross, like if the ink is like fresh, you're like, dude, what? No.
Hers didn't look fresh.
No.
It looked pretty.
It needs to be at like close to like more than 5 years old by this point.
Way more than 10 years. Hers looked about 15, so I think she was safe.
All right. Now it's just like, damn.
Right.
I was totally like, Irish Pride was cool in 91.
Right.
Fucking jump around. That shit was the shit, dude. Come on. Get up, get around. Celtic Pride.
Mm-hmm. So your brother, who sings our theme song today, we play also our 5-star review song, among other things.
Yeah. My little brother.
Yeah.
My not so little brother.
Yeah. He was interesting this weekend. I love the kid. I really do. I love him too,
but there was a lot of like, so he's, you know.
He's so funny. That's what he is.
But my family's, we large, right? Like, we eat. That's our thing. Like, we're all over 6 feet. We're all over 200 pounds. Like, we bigs people. And at various intervals, like, some have been bigger than others. And right now, I think my older and younger brother are going for the heavyweight champion belt or something. I don't know. And my older brother's like, he's got all these kids. He had, like, a bunch of health issues. Like, I kind of get it. My younger brother's still living in that, like, bachelor life.
Yeah, he is. He's he like, definitely. Like, I finally said, I was like, are you going to buy someplace? Like, what's going on with you, dude?
He's like 30 something. He's like,
to be 40 up in here.
He's telling me, he's like, yeah, I like to keep like 10,000 in check-in. I was like, what? Jesus Christ.
He has no expenses at all. He lives like a college student and he gets paid like a 50-year-old. It's ridiculous.
So he did at one point say, we got a bunch of food. We went to breakfast or lunch. I don't know. We went to dinner at a place that was like holy cannoli. And it looked like a fucking like a fishing joint, like a dive bar. It looked like a place you go play billiards.
It looked like a dive bar, but we walked in and everybody was like dressed to the nines.
Yeah,
and
I was like, it's like country club attire. Like, I didn't bring my jacket. I'm in like flip flops and fucking jean shorts and shit.
Yeah, there were like prostitutes working the bar. Like,
for real.
Like escorts were there. It was legit. I was like, we need to get our food to go because we're not dressed for this.
That although it wasn't my kind of white people, like that really is my kind of white people. I wasn't dressed for interacting with.
Oh, yeah, we could have been in there, but we weren't dressed for that. And their website should make it clear that they are.
So we got a bunch of food. We went, like, kind of crazy. Got, like, tons of shit, like, all sorts of stuff. And I'm thinking, like, great, we'll have all this food tomorrow. We'll have all these leftovers. Like, this will be really good, right? So it was really rich, you know, like the sauce, and it made a couple of us not so feel good. And the next morning, I was like, oh, man, I want to eat that, you know, this one thing that we ordered. And you're like, nope. Matt ate that. Like, what? What do you mean he ate that?
He ate it.
Like, what do you mean he ate it? He ate it. Come on, he didn't eat the whole fucking thing. He ate it. Like, really? He ate the whole thing? Jesus fucking Christ, he ate the whole thing. And then mom's like, where's my leftovers? Matt ate that. What? Like, no way he ate both of those things?
And then you're like, okay, how about the pizza? Wait, he ate that too?
He ate
and
so
I go,
much
I go, in his defense, he ate the pizza today. That was this morning.
Well, so then, listen, so we're all like kind of lamenting, like, man, I would have like this, would have been. And he was like, yeah, but that was kind of this. It made me sick. And like mom's like, yeah, I didn't feel so good either. And Matt's like, see, I'm like the minority report of eating. I take care of the food before it makes you sick. I was like, no, you did not just fucking say you were the minority report of eating. Don't. That is not a fucking, you don't want that, like, that's not a tagline, the minority report of eating.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
He said a couple of things like, what were we doing where something stunk to high heaven. He's like, don't worry, I got Febreze.
Don't worry.
I got Febreze. And I'm like,
I don't think
like,
that's going
to. Brother, I love you, but you can't just like.
But you have
like
that ready to go.
You're going
to
bathe in Febreze?
Yeah.
You like do like a double, like, you just walk through it.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Febreze. It does a lot of things, but.
I don't think it's going to do everything.
I don't think it's going to do math.
So we were staying at this like cabin type of thing. It was like on this lake, Lake Wandawega. And, the water was incredibly soft. It was clearly well water, not contaminated, but the water specifically in the kitchen had kind of like a smell to it.
Right.
So Matt noticed this right away.
It stunk. Let's be honest. It smelled like eggs. Like
rotten
eggs.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. So he's like, okay, I got to boil water. Now, we had a ton of bottled water already. And as I said, the bathroom water didn't smell at all. It was fine. It was just the sink in the kitchen. So I was like, oh, cool. And it was hot as fuck the first day when we got there. And the air was running. And he's got like these two big pots of water boiling. And I was just like, oh. And nobody would close the fucking sliding glass door as I'm trying to get the right. temperature down.
What do you mean to say? We enter into a vacation summer home that's not well insulated in like 90 degree weather.
And they had it set to like 77 because why the fuck wouldn't they? You know what I mean?
Yeah, people are away. It's in like away mode and it's hot as fuck and we're trying to get it cool and brother starts boiling 6 gallons of water. Right.
Now, on top of this, when we got there, all of us, we had beer, food, sodas, water, all this shit. We like filled the fridge and it was like working to cool everything, you know, all the stuff we had just added to it.
Yeah, you put a lot, like...
We were there for like 5 days, and so we needed to, you know, make sure it's stocked.
All the refrigerator does is cool the air around the items.
Right.
So if you put hot fucking items in there, like...
It works.
It's going to take some radiating heat.
So a little while after the water's boiling situation, I open the fridge, and I see this huge thing of water in there, and I stick my hand to touch it, and it's like warm.
I bet you he put it in there at like 100 degrees.
Literally, as soon as he could pour it into the plastic container, he put it in the fridge.
Why not?
And then your mother was like, this fridge is warm.
Yo, the all night long. He was like,
I swear, I thought when we woke up in the morning, it was not going to be working. I was like, we probably broke the fridge.
That fridge, like,
we are not good Airbnb people.
That fridge was like, please.
Let me stop. We're very good Airbnb people.
We have a good Airbnb.
I am. I don't know about the rest of you.
What I wrote down that he said something about smoke only mode. What was he talking about?
Oh, I don't know. That must have been a you and him combo.
He's fucking crazy.
Anyways,
man.
He was cracking us up. And then he told that story about Herb Jeffries, right?
Yeah, and I've never heard the story before.
Me neither.
And
which is like weird because it seems like something he would have for sure told me.
Yeah, so Herb Jeffries, born Umberto Alexander Valentino, September 24th, 1913 to May 25th, 2014. So lived to be 100 and just passed away. I was an American actor of film and television and popular music and jazz. Known for his baritone voice, he was of African descent and was Hollywood's first singing black cowboy. 40s and 50s, Jeffries recorded a number of labels, including RCA Victor, Corolla, Decca, Bethlehem, Columbia, Mercury, Trend. He had this is really cool. He had a self-produced album, Jamaica, recorded with RKO. It was a concept album of his own Calypso music songs.
Nice.
Yeah. So he was in a bunch of at the time they called them like race westerns in like the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Two Gun Man from Harlem, Harlem on the Prairie, The Bronze Buckaroo. And he actually had like a, you know, kind of a big deal with his early life and his ethnicity, right? So born Umberto Alexander Valentino in Detroit. His mother was Irish and she ran like a rooming house. And his father, whom he never knew, was mixed Sicilian, French, Italian, some Moorish roots. So he claimed, elements of blackness in some ways, and then later in his life sort of repudiated his blackness, claimed more of his whiteness. So I guess at some point, it was interesting. Like he went for an individual that very well could have, you know, quote unquote passed.
That's right.
And what a lot of people were doing at that time. He went the other way and sort of like, you know, tried to amp up his blackness to get, you know, roles and things. And, you know, like you said, he had this, you know, the Harlem Buckaroo Cowboy, these, you know, these sort of quote unquote
westerns.
Yeah.
Right.
But then later in his life, when it became, I guess, you know, more convenient, I guess. I shouldn't speculate. I don't know. Later in his life, claimed more of his whiteness and even said that he wasn't black and some of the things that, you know, to get black roles, he would amp up and say certain things and do certain things. So he has this very interesting, life and career, but very talented, like, you know, musician, jazz, like really, really talented. And so my brother is going to audition to go to school in, I think, was it Cincinnati? I can't remember what school he was going to. He told me the story. So he's 18. He's with my mom. He's not even 18. He's like 17. He's in high school. And he's in some B&B, like a boarding house, like an Airbnb type deal. And he's
going, a bed and breakfast.
A real bed and breakfast. Right. Thank you. And he was going to be playing because he went to school for music. So he was trying to practice and play the piano. And Herb Jeffries heard him playing and said, oh, you should come on down. I'm having a party. And it turned out to be like some sort of like fete, like an honorarium, like a 50 years in Hollywood kind of
right, they were like celebrating.
Yeah, it was like a huge like celebration of his life. And he spoke to Matt for like an hour and a half and was like, you're really good. You should keep playing and you've got great this and that, and gave him some like pointers and tips. And so Mom and Matt are talking about the story. And in fact, the only reason it came up is because she had noticed, I guess, like, the difference for one black person in a room full of white folk versus at that time they were the only white people in a room full of black people, and they're the level of comfort and just the differences. And so that was interesting that they had this this like interaction with a friggin' famous like black
pioneer.
Jazz and TV and music. It's kind of crazy. They like knew this guy. Like they had like a whole like interaction. I think later he would have been like, tag me on Facebook.
Hmm.
Yeah. His nickname was like the Bronze Buckaroo.
Yeah.
But he played.
I know that he was like the last of the singing cowboys after Roy Rogers and Gene Autry died. So
I mean, they're like the name of the folks that he's with. I mean, huge.
Yeah, Louis Armstrong.
Yeah. So it's crazy that Matt met this guy like
randomly.
Yeah, just playing at a B&B.
Kind of
neat.
He says he appeared at jazz festivals and at events benefiting autism and other developmental problems.
Okay.
Very interesting.
So there was another thing. That you and I, there's always been a dynamic in our relationship where you'll say like, oh, that's in my purse, and I'll just bring you your purse, right?
Like, yeah, it drives me crazy. I'm like, no, it's just open the front flap. It's my keys. Just grab it right in.
Here's
your purse. I don't go in purses. I'm not supposed to go in purses. And I'm like, what the fuck?
It's not about not supposed to. I don't think that's a level of, I don't know, like privacy. Like, I don't know. Like, do you rifle through my wallet?
If I want to. What do you mean? What are you talking about?
I swear, I forgot I was married to a black woman for about 3/2 of a second. Like,
yes.
You going to rifle through my wallet? God damn, I'm going to rifle.
I will. I'll do it
if I want to.
If you want me to.
Where hand it over.
Now that you mention it, I haven't done it in a month. Where is it?
You know the passcode to my phone. It's all
I
good.
Do.
What was that? Secrets? No secrets? Remember the sneakers? They were breaking the code.
Right, right, right.
No secrets.
No secrets.
No secrets. So, but yeah. So I don't go on purses. Yeah. That's not my thing.
So anyways, this exchange, your mom sends Matt to get something out of her purse and he brings her the purse. And I go, oh, but she said you could get it. He goes, oh, no. Like immediately, word for word, says everything you always say. I don't go to a woman's purse. It's too much. I just give him the purse. And I go, what the fuck? Like, what did you guys find in a purse?
That was the first thing you went to. Like,
what purse did you guys get into? What was in there? Like, what are you afraid of exactly? It's weird.
No, I think it's Winnetka.
What, just going in people's purses?
Yeah, just fucking, just rich-ass fucking people and shit. Like, they don't want anybody touching their purse. That's their purse. Where's my purse? Where's my purse? That's my purse! I don't know you!
Whatever. It's weird.
That's sundown town behavior.
Yeah, that is. Facts. Yeah.
So, we have a GPS in our car, and I fucking hate it. It's, nerve-wracking. Like, it's literally aggravating. And it's kind of one of these, if you're driving, you can't do shit, but, voice prompts,
Right.
So, I'm like, give me the state, give me the city, give me the address. The guy always kind of goes back and forth and it's like, calculate route. And it's just like, I don't know if it's my voice. Like, that video that had the two Scottish dudes in an elevator trying to get the floor to go to
11.
I felt like that, just like over and over, like this fucking thing all the time. Like when we were in New Jersey, the town Voorhees.
Yeah, Voorhees.
I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't do it. It was like Moorhees, Boorhees. Like it just couldn't do it. So we're going to what used to be Pine Knob, now has some stupid fucking DTE energy. It's just like Pine Knob was iconic. People know it. Even fucking Daryl.
I saw some of the roadies had Pine Knob shit on still. I was like, oh, okay.
Daryl's like, we used to come here back when it was, Pine Knob. So we went to Daryl Hall's and we're going to Pine Knob and it's in Clarkston and it's on Shoshabash Road.
Shoshabash Road. Yeah.
So I'm
which, like, first of all, even pronouncing it generally is ridiculous. So that was funny. Yeah,
I'm looking at the GPS. I'm like, oh, fuck.
You literally put your, like, this shit.
This is going to be a nightmare. Fuck. So it comes up and it's like, you know, street name. I'm like, and I literally said, like, it's like, Shoshabash. Like, I was like, all, like, tentative.
And this bitch goes, Shoshabash.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, she got it? So then the address, like, and again, same thing, like, number, if it's like 1200. You know, 400, 480, it can do that. And, like, sometimes you have to do, like, 482, like, you have to, like, break it down for her and shit. But the thousands and the 10,000s, ah, oh, she just fucking hates it. Like, it just doesn't work. Right. And it was like, you know, like, 17,864 Shawshaw Road. And she was just like, bing, calculate route. I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
she had a good day.
I guess she had a really good day. And it would have been a good day, except came home to
our dog won. Bailey Mac.
She's a killer.
She's a fucking killer. And she cornered and got sprayed by a motherfucking skunk.
Oh, it's better.
Now, this is bad news all around for everybody here, including our poor couch, because we didn't notice. All of a sudden, while also the skunk sprayed our...
Yeah. That's the real issue.
Our AC unit.
The dog cornered the skunk behind the air conditioner, okay? Like the big ass fucking, like, compressor that's sucking all the air in and blowing it into your house, right?
So all of a sudden, the entire house fills with when I tell you I'm nauseous right now, and it's dissipated some.
Here's the thing, like, for real, like, I know skunk smell. Like, I smell skunks.
This shit did not smell like skunk.
We've been in Jersey. I've smelled skunk here, there, and wherever. This was like, potent, high powered.
I thought it was like a Freon leak or a gas leak or a chemical spill. Like, for real.
It was way too much. It was just like, holy fuck, where's this coming from? It's everywhere. The entire house. The air conditioning. It was like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Like, my throat started closing up. My eyes were burning. I couldn't believe it. So because it came into the house like, wow, I was like, whoa, what the fuck is going on? We just, like, freaked out. We didn't think it was a skunk. We didn't, like, know what it was. It just, like, is this in the house? Is this out there? Like, where's this coming from? And by now we're just like, this is crazy. What's going on? Like,
right, because here's the thing. If it hadn't gone on if the skunk had just sprayed the dog,
we would have smelled the dog.
Then we would have connected the smell to the dog. But the dog wasn't there when we smelled it.
No.
So
the whole house blew up
nauseous smell. Right.
So we're like, oh my fucking God. We're like running around like, what's going on? Like, turned off the air conditioning. Like, I've never smelled. It smelled like chemicals. It smelled like really like chemicals, like sulfur. It didn't smell like the normal, like, you know, like skunk smells
not
like
even,
weed.
Not even sulfur, because even that has like an organic smell. This literally smelled like burning
chemicals,
plastic
burning
natural
chemicals.
Gas or something, really bad.
Yeah. So I'm just like, man, I can't believe this is like what's going on. My eyes are burning. My throat's closing up. So we're like, let's get out of the fucking house. We gotta get out of here. We pack the fucking dogs up. We get all our shit. And still haven't connected that the dog is fucking covered in skunk. Like, literally covered in skunk.
The whole face, everything.
Fucking just got blasted.
Skunk, the skunk was definitely bigger than her. She's not that big.
Nah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, this is like, honestly, like, I'm almost like, I don't want to talk about this on the show because it's a little too much, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. So we're here, and I was like, fuck, what is going on? Like, this is like, it's literally like my throat's closing. Like, I'm having.
So I run around, I start grabbing pillows and blankets and,
like, should we
bags
leave the house?
So we
should
just
leave? You know, go to, like, I really think I'm having like a anaphylactic, like, breathing shutdown, which can't happen. Like, that's a symptomology for people that get sprayed by a skunk.
Skunks, yeah.
And, like, you know, spray a skunk into your air conditioning unit, like, might as well spray the skunk.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not fucking calling any fucking services. No fucking way. Like, just, you know what I mean? Like, no. Just, I'm not doing that shit. But it wouldn't stop. It just wouldn't go. And I didn't know what to do. I was like, you know what? I feel like it felt like it was something in our house, right? Because it came from the air conditioning unit and, like, emanated from the basement and the house, and just the whole house was just like, the fuck? Like, I thought, like, there was a sewer pipe that broke under our house or something. Like, it just was like, what the fuck is going on? And we've had issues. We've had issues in this house specifically with toxic gas. Like literally, like, we lived with toxic gas in this house for a period of time. So I'm not fucking around. So I finally was like, you know what, Leslie, I know you're black. I know what this entails.
Do you?
Like, I, you know, I'm not, I'm not thrilled about it, but, you know, do you give me permission to, like, you know, call a non-emergency number? Can we just do that? Can we call it and just see what the
Which,
fuck?
First of all, like, it's so sad that we don't want to interact with services that we pay taxes for, that we should be, you know,
and we vacillated for, like a good, like, 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, should we? No, let's do it. It was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And I was like, fuck, what's going on with our house? Like, this is really, like, a problem. And then, like you said, I was like, I'm a taxpayer. Like, this is kind of like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, the thing for me was I felt like the longer we didn't do something, the worse it was going to be for us. Like I thought, it was like a health problem. I thought we were literally, like, breathing nauseous, like, you know, sewer gas.
And our neighbors might be too. Yeah. Because it smelled outside, obviously. It was a skunk.
So I called the non-emergency folk, and they send a, not an ambulance, but, like, one of those, like, you know.
Like a truck.
Yeah, like a not a full truck, but like a two-dude.
Like a pickup truck.
Yeah, two-dude in a vehicle with the flashing red lights. And they're not.
It's a fire guy.
Yeah, right, but yeah. They're not doing the sirens. They're just coming with the lights and shit. So they roll up and.
Meanwhile, we had driven around and I'm like, does it smell over here? And we'd open the windows and then all of a sudden it would smell just like in the car.
Because
we're like, see? Because the fucking dog was in the car with us and she was covered in it.
And stinky. Ugh. So we were out there and here comes, you know, Johnny Fireman. And we're obviously Black Lives Mattered up, right? Like that.
They didn't see me.
No, but that's my life. Like, you know, I just rolled that way.
Oh yeah, you had your Black BLM bracelet on.
Yeah, and I got a sticker on the car. Like, you just, you know, I have Black Lives Matter prominently displayed enough places that I don't think about it. I just, like, forget about
it's
it.
There,
it's right. Just there, and I think that's the better way to do it, right? So I know they saw that. Like, I know they saw that, and right away they're like, "Yeah, it's a skunk." And I literally about fell out. Just about fell out. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
And then I heard him say, like, yeah, most people haven't really smelled a skunk before. Most people.
When I told him, I was like, it got sprayed into my air conditioning unit. Like, oh, that smells like skunk. And there's like, holy fuck, what just happened to my house? Like, literally, like, the whole house exploded. A skunk sprayed straight, like, literally, like, lifted his fucking tail and sprayed its ass, like,
into the
air conditioning unit. No, Leslie, I don't think you quite understand. No, I went out to, like, investigate.
You looked at it?
It was soaking wet. It was covered in fucking skunk. Like, it literally was like, holy fuck, what the fuck? And I thought it was Freon. I thought we had, like, a Freon.
Leak,
yeah, I thought a pipe burst or something.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, what the fuck is that?
So then at 2:30 in the morning, we have to wash the dog and, like, vinegar and bullshit and scrub it. Oh.
I just know these firemen are back there with some sort of, like...
Fucking Black Lives Matter.
There's
calling the police for a skunk. Yeah,
there's a police forum, like a, you know, like, you got to be a policeman to be on the forum kind of deal. I know that these exist. They're like, you know, 4chan for cops. Like, they have these things,
right?
And I guarantee you there's one that's like, you know, fucking dumbest fucking Black Lives Matter, blah blah blah, and we're up there. we're the cover, you know,
this month.
Yeah, yeah. called fucking services on a skunk,
right?
And then this dog, dude, skunk face. Ugh, dude,
fuck this dog.
Fucking. And the other dog, her, she's got that thing where dogs paws, like, get, like, some, like, kind of like stinky feet. Like, a lot of dogs do that. It's like, you know,
it smells like Fritos.
Like Frito feet. Mm-hmm. It's not horrible, but it's like, you gotta bathe there, like, periodically. Like, dang, get that Frito feet. So now we got skunk face and Frito feet.
Oh god, I can't. I'm so mad at her. I won't even look at her.
Pair of fucking,
she knows I'm mad too.
Shenanigans. So I haven't been online as much, and I've been a little bit more in the last maybe couple of weeks. Obviously, Elton and Philando, things sort of changed a little bit, so I've been tweeting quite a bit.
Mm.
And trolls, you know, like,
yeah,
comes with the territory. And
come the troll.
Yeah, so I was having a bit of fun with Ricky Vaughn and his assery, because he's just, I don't know, he's a fucking idiot. But so he keeps tweeting with the fucking point, you know, like dot, very white guy. I'm like, dude, come on, that's so pathetic. You're like, notice me, senpai, notice me. And where's my thing?
Notice me, senpai, notice me.
That was Ricky. So I'm just having fun with him. And he obviously, like, tweeted something back or whatever. And his entire alt-right fucking, like, minions just fucking went, like, ballistic. And they kept coming with the cuck. Cuck this, cuck that, cuck, 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 cuck. It was like 30, 40 different people using the word cuck overnight. Because I did it at like 1 in the morning. And this is my new thing. If I'm going to troll back folks like that, I'm going to do it and just turn off the phone. Just be like,
right.
See ya. Because admittedly, I'm being dead ass. If I had been awake and seen all these coming in, it probably would have stressed me a little bit. There would have been some sort of emotional, how do you not? Like, there's an emotional, you know, a little bit of an emotional reaction to having somebody fucking like call you names and shit. And, like,
sure.
And when I say it was bad, like, I don't like exposing you to it, but they literally have these
nobody
folks
wants to hear about it.
An elaborate, like, they yeah. made a story, like a tweet story about yeah. me and, like, literally being cuckolded. Like, honest to God, like, that's what they think. Like, I'm a neutered
beta.
Well,
we already know that the actual cuckolds are very upset about all of this.
Yeah, they're pissed. They're pissed. They're but pissed. So the fake cuckolds think that people that aren't cuckolds are actually cuckolds. I don't fucking know. But so a lot of them, you know, the Ricky Minions kind of came stupid. And I was fucking calling them, like, the penis patrol and all kinds of shit. But I also noticed something else that I've only seen maybe a couple times before and now all of a sudden got really popular, like almost like the alt-right word of the day. And I was talking to you about it, and it kind of was like cracking us both up.
Yeah.
So the word of the day that they're using and they're throwing is virtue signaling. And it's apparently and supposedly something a white person does to demonstrate their subservience, in their opinion, to the black liberation cause. And when the race war breaks out, those white folks will be saved by black folk. Mm-hmm. And but literally, so just like breaking that down, and you did a pretty good job.
So I was
of
just
it.
Confused. When you yeah. mentioned this phrase, I hadn't heard it before. I was like, okay, so I just want to like break it out a little bit, because the phrasing of it, virtue signaling, right? So first of all, you're admitting that our stance is virtuous. So that's the first thing, because you're showing virtue. And then also, if you need to signal to be saved, that means we win, too.
Yeah, so first of all, you're unvirtuous, and the nature
and you're
of
a loser.
Your phrases, you think you're going to lose.
I don't think these words mean what they think they mean. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. Get it together, all right.
Get I just it thought together. It was funny. Like, look at this virtue signaling. I'm like,
okay, I'll signal virtue. That sounds like fine to me.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. When the race war happens and the black people win, you'll be saved. If I'm going along with your plan, sounds like it works out for me. So
just the whole thing's crazy.
Thumbs up. Like, what the fuck? It's so stupid.
It's crazy. It's really, there's a lot on the alt-right that's bizarre to me, but that one was like, not just bizarre, but like illogical. Like a lot of it's illogical, but this one was really like, but none of it makes sense. Like you're this thing you're accusing me of makes you look like a not virtuous loser.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Guilty.
That's kind of what my point was.
So today I was talking about Bank of America and a few other things. I had an issue with PayPal and Uber. You don't have to hear about the John. You can go read my Twitter bullshit about it. But it was interesting that I didn't get anywhere with PayPal. Uber kind of was like, okay, we'll look into it. But BOA, Bank of America, was like, no, please, let us help you. Come on. You know, give us a. And they were persistent. They came to me, you know, like two or three times. Follow us. Give us a DM. And I went to them in DMs like a day or two ago. And I was like, okay, blah, blah, blah. And they wrote back. And I wasn't rude, but I was like, listen, I don't want to get on the phone and talk to you about other Bank of America products that would help avoid a not sufficient fee, right? Like I got hit with an NSF fee because it went below the thing.
The thing, right.
So, and again, it's complicated, but PayPal fucked up. They didn't give my direction to
PayPal,
Uber.
PayPal fucked up and we took a bunch of Ubers.
Correct.
And each Uber
yeah.
pushed us further and further.
Yeah. I took an $8 Uber.
It was $40.
And got a $35 right. non-sufficient fee. It was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. To the tune of $140. Like it wasn't just a little bit. It was $140, right? And like, again, like a $5 Uber, an $8 Uber, and a $20 Uber
so
cost me $140. So I'm pissed at PayPal. I'm kind of trying to figure out. I'm calling. Nothing going on. Finally, I was like, you know what? I'll go to Twitter. I tweet. I tag PayPal, Uber, do all my things. And again, BOA, Bank of America was like, you know, please, I go to the DMs, listen, I don't want to talk to you about how to avoid non-sufficient fund fees by having a fucking like line of credit. If that's what you're wanting to talk to me about, please.
I don't want to talk about it.
And I told them straight up, like, I don't think this is Bank of America's fault. Like, I really like PayPal and Uber, PayPal made this mistake. And really what I asked from PayPal was a letter detailing how this happened, and they kept giving me a boilerplate saying it was my mistake. Like they give me a letter that was like, you know, the customer didn't know to default bank and this. And I'm like, that's not what happened. So I finally get Bank of America today, Amy, nice customer service rep, very pleasant. And they're talking. And you know, pretty much quickly was like, listen, I'll take care of the NSF fees. I'm going to remove those. And I was like, I really appreciate that. You know, it's not necessarily your responsibility, but I appreciate it. And she said, and sometimes like when you hear something from somebody else, it's like, oh, like I've been like, they won't give me a letter. They won't give me a letter. I'm all pissed. They won't give me a letter. Amy's like, well, getting an organization to put in writing that they made a mistake is probably not going to happen. I was like, oh, duh. Like, of course they're not going to, like, we're PayPal and we fucking suck. Give Drew his money back. Like, I was like throwing a fit. And like, as soon as Amy said that, I'm like, oh, fucking A, of course I'm not going to get that letter from PayPal. So I thought it was wonderful. They were very pleasant. They gave me my money back, you know. And it, to them, it was like they could see it wasn't my doing. Like, she even looked at the account. She's like, you've been a customer for over, you know, 10 years. You've got, you know, this kind of activity, so forth and so on. So a lot of people were like, fuck Bank of America. You know, I hate BOA. Why are you still with BOA? And I had to be honest and tweet BOA help and say, hey, thanks. You know, great customer service. I appreciate it. You did a wonderful job. Thank you very much. Like, that's the least I could do, seeing as, like, they did that for me, right?
Right.
So
then you did contact them through that.
I did. And I only tagged them once. And I even said, this is not your fault. I'm not looking at anything from you. Like, you know, I only tagged you because you're my bank, right? And this is where the money came from. So I did that, and I was like, you know, I don't want people to be all like, you know, thinking some way about it. So I, after that series of tweets, said, listen, this is probably, not probably, this is definitely because of privilege. And, you know, I have a different experience with this bank. I've been a customer a long time. I've got, you know, money with them. I've had loans and home equity lines of credit. Like, I've had different, like, they see me as a valuable customer. And because of that, I've been able to, like, ooh, I missed a credit card payment. Normally your APR goes up when you fuck up. I call them and say, hey, listen, don't ding me. You know, can you keep this APR the way it's supposed to be? Sure, no problem. You're allowed that once every 24 months. Like, whatever. They do things that, you know, I think is partly because I'm a customer a long time, definitely because I'm white. But independent of that,
right,
the ability for me to even contact them, like the fact that they responded to me, is directly related to privilege, is directly related to the number of followers I have,
right,
is directly related to white supremacy. Because right, I'm a white dude talking about white supremacy on Twitter. That's like cookies and snowflakes and all the kind of, like, you know, there's not a whole lot of fucking, like, you know, there's not tons of white dudes on Twitter talking about, like, most of the white dudes on Twitter are like, Trump, Trump, Trump. So it's like, you get the cookies, right? So because I get the cookies, I've got a bigger audience because I've got a big, and I did the follow back thing, I gamed it, but with that audience I can leverage it now to get shit like this from BOA.
Right.
And in the context, I was like, you don't believe me, go look at my wife Leslie Mack. She started tweeting well before me. When I started tweeting, I had maybe 300 followers with like zero tweets. Like, I didn't tweet anything. I had like 300 like bots, right? And you, I think, were over 1,000. You're like 1,200, 1,500 when I started.
Right.
And it wasn't very long before I passed you, and now, and I'm not trying to say this like an honorific, it's almost embarrassing that I've got 20 some odd thousand and you've got 8,000, right? 9,000
yeah,
now?
Yeah, and, something like that.
But you don't do the follow back. There's, you know, there's a lot of different.
I don't follow anybody.
Exactly. So, but the, you know, I was making this comment, and I called you my wife, this and that, and talked to a few other people. Like, I know, and we should experiment someday. I've seen you tweet something and add a specific individual, usually a white person, and that, and maybe even somebody we know, that person will be like, I don't think so. Mm. They'll get all like, kind of mad at you.
Yeah.
And then I'll say basically the same thing privately. They're like, oh, I hear you. Okay. Yeah. Got it. It's like, you're doing this problematic shit. And like a black woman checks you and you just can't handle it. And a white dude's like, yo. And you're like, oh, okay, I got you. I'll listen. Thanks. And it's like, you know, it's just, that's white supremacy. So I said that, and Rain of April, this has not happened in,
number of months, I would say.
At least 5 or 6
yeah,
months. A while.
Like that.
It happened a bit in the beginning.
A lot.
A lot in the beginning. But so people don't know we're married. Not everybody knows that we're married. And even, I would say less common now, is people that know you and know me online independently, right, but haven't connected us to being married. And I'd say Rain of April is the, like, obviously the most recent, but like, I would say like the highest profile, biggest
not
person.
Not the highest profile, but like, I interact with her quite a bit.
Yeah, so do I.
And so do
I.
You. So I think that's funny. It's cute.
It's kind of cute. And I said I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah. That warms my heart that we have the capability to be known independently and it'd be a surprise that we're
together.
I think, and maybe even like, I bet you, like, I don't know, I should ask April, but like, there's probably like, oh, that makes total sense.
Oh, that makes
of
sense.
Of course. Got it. It's not Drew. It's Leslie Mann. God, fuck. I thought, man, this white guy's too good. This can't be.
He too good.
He knows too much.
He too good.
Who gave him the fucking playbook? Oh shit, it's Leslie Mack. Goddamn.
God damn.
And I only say it's funny that people don't know, because there's been numerous times where I'm like, you know, I'll say this almost the same kind of vein, like, you know, blah, 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 blah. Because I'm a white dude, if you like anything and anything I've said resonates, you know, understand it's absolutely the 100% direct tutelage of my black wife, Leslie Mack. Of my wife, Leslie Mack. You know, go follow her. You know, she's a black woman. She knows the fuck she's doing. Don't listen to me. You shouldn't be. Anyway.
You fucking cuck.
You did not just fucking call me a fucking cuck in my own fucking house. No! On the podcast! I'll fucking show you who the cuck is tonight.
Mm-hmm. Cuck in the hen house. Okay. So.
You know, the other, someone on my Twitter time said they laughed that Bank of America's handles BOFA.
Oh, yeah, BOFA.
BOFA help.
BOFA. Every time I see it, I'm like,
BOFA help these nuts.
I guess I won't change it now, but it's not looking good. Like, especially because people call them BOA. So it makes absolutely no sense to put the F in there. But whatever, Bank of America. Do you?
BOFA.
BOFA. Do you? Do you?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Should we do some news?
Yeah, let's do it.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
Oh, yes. Yes. So Led Zeppelin's cultural appropriation and thievery is coming to light. And so there's a lawsuit that's going to be starting up, I think, in California Superior Court involving the surviving members of Led Zeppelin and their record label and a band that they toured with, you know, years ago, like in the 60s. And a song that the band had that sounds so reminiscent to Stairway to Heaven that it's kind of not right, right? So this is coming about, and it's actually... It's interesting. So there's a shift in the music industry in regards to royalties and rights, and you know that thing where the technology advanced faster than the legal system could keep up. So like the what was it? Vanilla Ice and his Dings.
Oh, right? Yeah. So they copyrighted.
Yeah, they stole Under Pressure. And at the time the law was written, you can only sample 7 bars. That 8th bar becomes a measure, and now you can't use that. That's a copyright infringement. So the Under Pressure is doom 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 doom. No. There's no ting. Doom 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 doom. Vanilla added the hi-hat.
That's what
doom doom ting. So Vanilla's ting allowed him to make all that fucking money. And then it changed. Then the change was any recognizable sample. So it doesn't have to be 7, 8, 6.5. If it's recognizable, boom.
Right.
Then the lawsuits enabled, I would say, shifting a little bit of what the definition of recognizable is, right? So like for a little bit, recognizable was kind of only considered like if you took this exact beat, like these 4 bars,
right,
or these 4 beats, and right, it was just, you know, you took it and you used it in some way. Even if you chopped it up, they were kind of like, yeah, that's the same thing. So now it's more like it could be a different measure, a different key. But if the harmony or the melody
is the same,
it's just too similar. Like, and so the more recent
and now
one
they
is,
have like experts that testify. Yeah, yes, right. Oh, they're the same.
And I think the bellwether case here was Marvin Gaye and Robin Thicke. Yeah. Where it's like nah, you can't. No.
Like, I see what you did, Pharrell, but fuck you. Like, yeah. No,
that ain't happening.
I see that.
So now that that's come out, now there's this like almost like the folks that went after people that were stealing treasure from Holocaust victims and keeping it for years and years and years.
Right.
Like, there's like a retribution, but the word I'm looking for. Like, you're going back to right wrongs that were really old, right?
Reparations.
Thank you. but there isn't a statute of limitations on some of this stuff. And this is one of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this Led Zeppelin lawsuit's coming out. And they're, like, I've always known that they've stolen shit. And there's a couple of my favorite Zeppelin songs that's always, like, as a kid, it was like, damn, this fucking song's this right here, this album speaks to me. This is my song. And pretty early on, I was like, wait, that's a cover. Wait a minute, that's not a Zeppelin song.
Right.
That's a Willie Dixon song.
Right.
It doesn't say Willie Dixon on the album at all. Mm-hmm. Like, why is there a Willie Dixon song on this album? Like, that's kind of strange to me. And really, they appropriated black blues musicians more than anything else. But this lawsuit coming to bear is going to be, it's a white group that they stole from. But I'm going to play a YouTube video that's got a couple of different juxtapositions of Led Zeppelin songs and then the artist that they're... you know, stealing from, and I'll read which one is. So. said, "Baby, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You," was a folk song by Ann Bredson, created and arranged by Jimmy Page. And then by legal action, it's now Breeden, Page and Plant. Word for word.
Wow.
Word for word.
Wow.
Lawsuit got a name on the album. This is Black Mountainside. On the album was uncredited, and it's a traditional folk tune that was originally recorded by Bert Jansch. These are the white folk. They're stealing from black folk. Comes a little
Surprise.
Bit later.
One morning fair, I took the air.
Melody's identical.
Wow.
It's a little bit more complicated, but...
Oh, yeah, that's the same song.
This is my Bring It On Home. It's an uncredited cover of Willie Dixon.
Do an uncredited cover.
What?
Like those words can't really be together. It's a cover, it's credited. Wow.
They just whited it up.
Wow.
This is a communication breakdown. They even use the word breakdown, and it's heavily derived from Eddie Cochran's Nervous Breakdown.
You're about to break some white people's hearts tonight, dude.
They even use the word breakdown. They couldn't Terrible. Even change the word breakdown.
Why would they? Lazy. They need to. They could just steal. What difference does it make?
Ugh. Custard Pie is an uncredited cover of Bucca White's Shake 'Em On Down.
Wow.
And lyrics from Sleepy John Este's Drop Down Better. Word for word.
Wow.
Squeeze my lemon, let the juice run down my leg. This is the one that breaks my fucking heart, dude. I got like pause it for a second. This song was my childhood. Like literally one of the first albums I ever owned.
One
of the first
one?
Yeah, fuck. The movie Dazed and Confused. It's like a 30-minute fucking swan song where Jimmy Page pulls out the fucking violin bow. Shit was just like, this is my youth, and it breaks my heart. Again, uncredited cover of Jake Holmes.
But this is like their whole catalog.
Oh, yeah. Literally.
Wow.
13 songs.
Wow.
Another one. How many more times? An uncredited cover of Howling Wolf song.
Wow.
Part two is an uncredited cover of Albert King's The Hunter. And again, the cover of Hunter's word for word. It's a cover. It's a cover.
They call me the Hunter. That's my name. A pretty woman.
I'll stop it. It goes on
wow.
and on. And the link's in there. And I want to get the one... Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven.
Well, the thing that gets me is this is just actually goes back to the argument I had with Boy George on Twitter.
Oh, totally.
About the origins of rock and roll and how, you know, black people aren't, that's not their music. And it's like, but you, okay.
No, just stop that fucking. So here's an attempt, I think, someone at mixing Stairway to Heaven and the song Taurus, which is going to come to light in a court case in L.A., I think, this summer. This is Taurus, a song called Spirit. So this is still Taurus. This is not Led Zeppelin. This is Taurus
wow.
Spirit.
Really?
It gets so much worse. Here's Stairway to Heaven.
It's the same song. Wow.
And Stairway to Heaven's like their quintessential, like Led Zeppelin's literally like, name a Led Zeppelin song, Stairway to Heaven. So when I say it gets so much worse, Led Zeppelin and or Jimmy Page, I think it was Led Zeppelin, not just Jimmy Page, toured with Taurus. Taurus opened up for them, and
what?
They heard this song repeatedly for an entire
no
tour.
Way.
Recorded by Taurus in 1968, released by Led Zeppelin in 1971. It's like I said, it's like, I don't call it like devastating, but it's just like they stole fucking everything.
They stole
everything, dude. Fucking I Can't Quit You, Babe is another one like that. So Led Zeppelin one, like I said, it spoke to me because it's blues. It's a fucking blues album. It's not a fucking white rock album. It's
right.
A fucking blues album.
Of course it did.
Of course. I love the, you know me, I play the harp. I love the blues. That would speak to me. A fucking like bunch of white people taking blues music and making it, you know, acceptable for 13-year-olds in the fucking suburbs and shit, dude.
Right.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's crazy. It's so lifted. Like, there's no even question. It's just bad.
All your faves suck. Is that, mm-hmm. that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Because it sounds like
Led Zeppelin sure do suck.
Horrible ass people. Well, this might tickle people's fancy. The U.S. government is planning to use drones to fire vaccine-laced M&Ms near endangered ferrets.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Vaccine M&Ms.
Yep.
They're going to launch them at ferrets?
So the ferrets eat them?
And, okay.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has a plan to save the endangered black-footed ferret, and it involves candy. So,
and drones?
They've proposed delivering vaccines to the ferret colony in Montana using drones capable of shooting vaccine-laced M&Ms. They've been endangered since 1967 and remain very rare. Only about 300 total live in the United States. And one of the threats to the ferret population is the Sylvatic plague, a bacterial disease transmitted by fleas. The plague is lethal to both ferrets and prairie dogs, who provide ferrets with a good source of food and tunnels for shelter. An oral Sylvatic plague vaccine has already been developed and approved for prairie dogs and ferrets, and they think the drones will help them. Randy Matchett, a biologist with the USFWS, says, "We dropped the vaccine out of a bag while walking around, but that's very hard to do over thousands of acres. We're working with private contractors to develop equipment to drop the vaccine uniformly across an area rather than one hog getting to eat a pile of them." So there you go.
So the vaccine's been eaten by hogs in mass, and now they're going to go the drone round.
Yeah.
I'd like to know the job description. Like, what are you going to do? I'm flying drones and shooting M&Ms at black-footed bears.
Shoot some M&Ms at black-footed bears. It's cool.
Black-footed ferrets.
David Bowie.
Yeah. And like, what's your like, is there like a M&M tracker? Like, pew, pew, pew. Yeah, good work, Drew.
Right.
You got him.
You got him, man.
The ferrets can eat it. You can eat it. Yes. Vaccinated. Yeah. And do you have to get all of them vaccinated or like one in the colony?
I don't know. Like if they probably want all of them, as many of them to eat it. Because I think vaccine, you can't transmit that.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not saying like there shouldn't be vaccines. Like, cause obviously like we've eliminated like things like polio and like we've got like, there's been some good vaccines.
Lots of them.
But I just like in the animal world, like should we be vaccinating animals? Like that seems kind of like counterintuitive to the natural selective thing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like I get it. We're humans. Like we're top of the chain. Like, but against the natural selection, do what you want to do with, you know, aside from cloning and shit. Like I'm going to get into that, but like, I don't know, like monkeying with vaccines and ferrets. Like I just,
you're trying to save them, I guess.
I mean, they do that shit all the time.
Yeah. So you're saying they should just be?
I don't know. I don't know.
Extinct.
I'm not saying they should be extinct. I'm not sure. I'm not an entomologist. I don't work with like the world like biomass like foundation of like what animals should and shouldn't become extinct in terms of the supply and chain. That's not my bailiwick.
Mm.
If they say vaccinate the black-footed ferrets with drones, I assume there's reason for it, and it's not just because Senator fucking what's his name wants. Wants money for his fucking group, and that's the thing he came up with. I need to move $600,000 into private hands for my DNR.
Yeah,
my Department of Natural Resources.
Right,
yeah.
Resources.
What are you gonna do? Oh, black-footed ferret. That's it. Drones.
Drones.
Give me some M&Ms.
Drones are the answer. Plastics and drones.
And drones. That's crazy. So we're here in Michigan now, and we get a lot of Michigan news. Right, get a little news alert, and this one. I'm just going to read the story because I read it and it was almost impossible. I just was like, this just doesn't, it writes itself. So Michigan, of course, GOP candidate.
Oh, Michigan.
Ignore my arrests for publicly masturbating in other people's cars, please. So candidate running for the 95th House District in Michigan. Wants you to know that once you look past his bizarre sexual fetish and multiple felony convictions, he's a really rock-ribbed conservative Republican who's a stool of conservatism and upheld by faith, family, and freedom. Good kind of guy. Hmm. So Michigan Live is reporting that Saginaw's Jordan D. Haskins, and I like to really lift that up, Jordan D. Haskins of the 95th District in Michigan, living in Saginaw, running for the 95th House District, Jordan D. Haskins, dismisses the arrest and prison time as the results of youthful indiscretion and said he's ready to move on and do what I can to serve his state as a Republican representative. And here's the best part, Haskins. I have dreams.
Oh, Lord.
And I said, I had dreams, Haskins said to Michigan Live, and I want to make a difference.
Oh,
and
I bet he does.
Side note, it's not on our John notes for today, but remember the conversation you and I had about this, like, white entitlement of, like, well, I dreamed, therefore I am.
I dreamed it, so I'm going to be it. And
Trump is the ultimate of that, like,
oh, yeah,
you know, embodiment.
But like, I just want it.
I just want it. Okay. Haskins, 24. So this youthful indiscretion, he's over it at 24.
24.
Has served prison time in two states. And is currently on parole, but there are no rules preventing running for the House, Senate, in Michigan. On four occasions between April 2010 and January 2011. So I just want to make sure we're getting this timeline down. Four times in a span of 8 months. Okay? Mm-hmm. It wasn't even like a couple of years. Four times in 8 months, Haskins broke into vehicles on public and private property, disconnected the ignition wires, then started the engine. As the wires snapped and spit sparks, Haskins would masturbate to climax in a sexualized ritual he calls cranking. And listen, truth is stranger than fiction. I'm going to read this again. Saginaw's Jordan D. Haskins, running for the GOP Michigan 95th House District, was arrested on four occasions for breaking into cars, hot wiring it, and as the wires snapped and spit sparks, masturbating to climax in a sexualized ritual he calls cranking.
This can't be real life.
I wish it were.
It can't.
I wish this wasn't real life.
It just can't be.
It's Michigan Live. It's literally like AP. Wow. It's Michigan. He was talking to M Live. He's like, this is quotes from him. Like, it's a sexualized ritual he calls cranking. Like, this isn't shit that like somebody dug up. This was him reporting to an M Live person.
Cranking. Wait, there's another name for it? Pedal pumping?
Wait, does other people do this thing?
No, it says for some cranking or pedal pumping.
Oh,
fetishes.
All right, so let's finish the article.
Oh, my God.
Haskins has lived in Michigan and North Carolina and has lengthy criminal records in both states dating to the age of 15. Early offenses mostly to do with breaking into cars and going on joyrides. You know what? Most people, that's called stealing and grand theft, and black kids go to jail forever on that. But okay, breaking into cars and joyrides, run for Congress. I was just a lonely, angry kid at the time, he said. If anything, I could be put on world's dumbest criminals, MLive said. North Carolina's Department of Public Safety reports a lengthy list of sentences to prison, county jail, and probation for offenses committed in 2006, 7, 8, and 9, including breaking and entering, larceny, and trespassing, and I assume cranking if it were a law that could be broken.
Once
he returned to Michigan, however, that he started seeking sexual gratification from his breaking into vehicles. Reportedly broke into the lot where Saginaw Mosquito Control stored its sprayer trucks and other equipment. Police reports obtained by Michigan Live say that Jordan would remove the spark plug wires and sit in the car and masturbate while the motor was sparking and making noises.
In another occasion, he broke into a lot where the sheriff's cruisers were parked, confessed to joyriding around the lot and masturbating in a police cruiser and truck.
Where are the all lies, blue lies people now? Where's all the fucking, y'all got a fucking dude breaking into cop cars and fucking cranking and jerking off, and you gonna let him run for Congress? Come on. Where's Rudy Giuliani calling this a fucking outrage? Where's Sheriff David Clark? Come on, there's a cranking war on cops. It's a cranking epidemic. People are pedal pushing cop cars.
Oh my goodness! Listen, this guy is crazy.
January 2011, jumped a fence and broke into a car repair business. Scientific break, and police said later admitted to joyriding a truck and then listening to the engine idle and masturbating. It's a fetish, he said, and he learned about online. For some, cranking or pedal pumping fetishes, participants derive sexual satisfaction from watching a man or woman who they desire struggle to start a stalled car. Why?
What?
That's an odd fetish. Watching a man or woman who they desire struggle to start a stalled car. Probably because their fetish is rape. That's what that really is. Their fetish isn't watching someone fail to start a car.
I don't like talking about people's fetishes can be whatever. That's not the, to me, that's not a problem, but the breaking in part is hilarious. And then you have the nerve to run for fucking office. It's just so
cranking the engine and pumping the gas pedal on the floor. As Haskins, the fetish revolves around starting the car oneself and masturbating. Newspaper The Independent carried an article about this fetish, describing it as a growing trend.
Okay.
He says, I was messed up. I had a messed up state of mind, mentally and emotionally, when I did that. That was the only way I can even explain it. I really had no friends at the time. I don't really know what I wanted to do. I was one of those young people who grew up without a father in the house, grew up with his grandmother and his mom. I just really, what does that have to do with anything?
It doesn't mean, he's just giving his little side story. Anyway,
this is why he masturbates?
This part's the best to me. Yeah, he was lonely. He didn't have anybody to show him. Because, you know.
It's funny that his lack of a father is an acceptable reason for him to be cranking and masturbating in police cruisers. Yet a lack of a father is an acceptable reason for a black person to be killed by police. Really interesting. Mm-hmm. The exact same thing.
He was convicted of multiple felonies, including breaking into and masturbating in police vehicles, and isn't underneath the jail. Listen.
Not only not underneath the jail,
running for
state Congress.
So he says that he believes his values will connect with voters. I want to be the Republican, the conservative candidate that says, you know, conservatism is for you. Because conservatism, real conservatism, true red-blooded American conservatism is about grit, hard work, loyalty, traditional values, and fetishes, your family values.
Honestly, like, I feel like there's like in my mind, I don't know what the reality is. I don't. There's probably a whole lot of just things at play. But in my mind, there's like a big old like GOP machine and they're like cranking out like the next generation and they're trying to find like the young Republicans of like, you
this
know.
This is the next generation?
they're scraping the bottom of the barrel, dude. Like, what do we got to get in Saginaw, Michigan? Oh, man, he's been breaking into cop cars and masturbating. We can spin it.
I don't know.
Jordan D. Haskins.
It'll be tough.
Cranking for Congress. Yeah. That's the show name right there, dude. Cranking for Congress.
I actually wrote down he calls it cranking.
Cranking for Congress.
Well, I'm sure folks have heard about Leslie Jones's horrible situation that's happened on Twitter. The comedian who is one of the stars of the new Ghostbusters movie was attacked by racists, no surprise, on the Twitter. Really horrible things. All the stuff that we all, you know, pictures of monkeys and...
It was the ugliest of the ugly. And
so horrible.
The thing is, she's been getting it and gets it forever and ever and ever and ever. Yeah. She decided yesterday, mm-hmm. I'm not going to fucking take this anymore. Yeah. And her decision... I think there's a lot specifically in this decision that I'd like to talk about with you.
Yeah.
But, you know, so she decides, I'm not going to allow these people to harass me silently. And she just simply took screen caps and retweeted them, you know, put them to her timeline, sometimes with commentary, oftentimes without. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously emotional, you could tell, you know, like in the volume. I mean, she did it for hours. Just,
right.
You know, and we're talking.
One after another. Yeah, after another, yeah. After another.
And then that makes people get uglier and now it's like a game. I saw one dude fucking like, oh, she fucking blocked me. Oh, fuck you. Like he made it his cover photo, you know, Leslie blocking him and shit. Him. Mm. So that goes on. And there was the thing I was saying about, so her decision, I think one, you know, good for her. It's, you know, I don't question her at all. Like you decide whatever you want to do for your life and how you decide to do it. like no one questions me. Like if I go bashing trolls, like I've done it. Like I've had trolls, and I've been really fucking shitty, and like I'm in a bad fucking mood. I'm gonna fucking just troll back again and again and again. I've done it for fucking much longer, 48 hours straight.
Yeah.
And people will come to me. Don't do it. You're just giving them, it's all they want. The haters, da 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 da. And you know, I'm just like, you know what? That you don't get to tell me what to do. I'm my decision is based primarily on my mood, and I was in a bad mood, and Kick the Racist felt good. So I felt like Leslie wasn't getting that at all. Like all these like quote unquote white, allies or whatever were like, don't do it, rise above it. And it's like, why does she, that's so fucking anti-black. Like
yep.
She's got to rise above it. Like a fucking hate-filled fucking gauntlet that you will never fucking see. You will never see.
Nope.
Literally, you will never see that. And she's got to rise above it? Why?
Like, why does she have to rise above
it? Why should she rise above it? Yeah. Can't she fucking have a whatever day and fucking kick her races? So, I can't remember who started it. I thought someone maybe popular or someone started, but so the a hashtag got started for her, I guess.
Yeah, just to support her. And actually, I do want to give credit to the person who started it because it's a black woman, and I'm sick of us not.
Thank you.
Actually, getting credit for the things that we do, and it was Marissa Ray One, MarissaRei1. And she said, I'm proud of Les Dog, at Les Dog, for being an inspiration to little black girls the same way she was inspired by those before her. Hashtag love for Leslie J. And that people picked that up and started tweeting. I tweeted it a bunch as well. And I think it was actually the top trending topic at some point last night. So that was kind of cool to see, but didn't help Leslie. I mean, obviously, she said that she was leaving Twitter. The last tweet she sent was, I leave Twitter tonight with tears and a very sad heart. All this... because I did a movie. You can hate the movie, but this shit I got today was wrong. And then she had a longer statement she had put out earlier. One of the things that she said was what you were talking about people saying like, oh, don't stir them up. Like, don't stoop to your level. She says, it's way past that. So please have a seat. Don't tell me how to react because I have every right to be offended and pissed. I feel like I'm in personal hell. I didn't do anything to deserve this. It's just too much. It shouldn't be like this. So hurt right now.
Yeah, it's really, and she did eventually. Jack at Twitter, said, "Hey, DM me," but
yeah, but the rest of us don't get Jack at Twitter to give a shit. Getting fucking pummeled by racists out here.
The platform needs to do something. It just is really fucking disgusting, and they could do things. They know that these accounts, they can, it's so easy to identify people that have multiple accounts. They know. They can see the IP address. It is not a fucking hardship to go, oh, this address is running 20 accounts. 5 of them have been fucking flagged. 4 of them are banned right now. Let's IP ban this fucking user.
Right.
This is not somebody we want to let into our fucking platform.
Right.
What good are they doing?
Right.
I guess
Twitter's not a right in the world, right? Like, I feel like a lot of times these companies try and take this, like, well, it's free speech. Like, yeah, but you're not, you're just a company.
Yeah.
You can do whatever the fuck you want to do. So stop pretending like that's going to hurt you in some way.
They could do, honest to God, literally.
The problem is they get traffic. So they want to keep the traffic.
I understand. But if they were, you can keep the traffic, allow fucking all this shit. Just give me or any other user filters. All you fucking do, give me a fucking filter that says, don't show me any fucking mentions from any fucking account that's under a fucking year old. Don't show me fucking shit from an egg. Don't show me fucking shit from anybody that's got less than 100 fucking tweets. Like, that would get rid of 90% of trolls. Literally.
Yeah.
Egg Avi, account age under fucking like a month and less than like 500 tweets. If you just did that, just do that. And I'd fucking eliminate a giant load of fucking trolls. And I'm sure it would for fucking you and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be so easy. That doesn't deny the account. That's not a fucking, like, a ban. That doesn't fucking... All that does is allow me, the client and customer, to moderate my experience better.
Mm.
It doesn't stop that guy from tweeting me.
No.
It doesn't stop that person from...
Although I do think if you block somebody, they shouldn't be able to tweet you.
Oh, I think that too. That'd be another real simple to do. If I'm blocking you, you're at me shouldn't...
Work.
It should just not send.
Yeah, I agree.
It should just be like, nope, that person.
You shouldn't be able to tag
it doesn't
me
exist.
Or do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I should disappear from your everything.
Yeah.
What
was the hashtag for Leslie though again?
It was love for Leslie J.
Yeah.
F-O-R, Leslie J. And Ijeoma wrote this really great piece for The Guardian about it. I think it's titled Leslie Jones's Twitter Abuse is a Deliberate Campaign of Hate. And she says in part in it, but many women of color, especially black women on the internet, face the same abuse that Jones is facing now. And we will tell you, this isn't that this isn't a harmless prank, that this isn't about hurt feelings or even the sting of a racist comment. This is a deliberate campaign of abuse perpetrated on us to keep us off the internet, and it needs to be taken seriously.
Yeah, I agree. It's there's a – and I know – so I'm not going to say who, but I got contacts. I'll just say that. I know people. I know people. And I have somebody that went undercover and went into some of these, like, you know, just to see what was going on. And it was everything I absolutely knew. There's a listserv, an RSS, there's an email, there's, you know, chan groups, all kinds of ways to sign up and have disseminated basically like kind of like Twitter storms. You know, like if you like had someone that was doing Twitter storm, it was like you would DM somebody privately like, hey, you know, Sunday at 7 o'clock, Twitter storm, use this hashtag and here's some fucking pre-filled whatever. Like, they do these paste bin kind of things to fucking roll out and attack people.
Right.
You know, like, I guarantee you, yesterday with Leslie started with somebody in some fucking darknet fucking corner.
Well, this whole thing is like, that they've already been, like, the thing about it is that this,
well, they were targeting
Ghostbusters. They've been anti-Ghostbusters.
Correct.
And so, of course, of everybody there...
Who are they going to go
Who's
after?
Who's going to get worse?
Ain't Kristen Wiig.
It ain't fucking Melissa McCarthy.
Nah.
No, it's going to be Leslie. So.
Well, and I think that maybe that might have been it. It was the amplitude of all the fucking bullshit about it being an all-female cast and then the intersection of, you know, her being black. And then I think there are some poignant... No, this is really what it is. We haven't seen the movie yet, but I know that there are a couple of scenes that take race and intersectionality. They do... You know, a little bit with it. And I guarantee you white men are the butt of a lot of jokes, right? Or at least some jokes. Mm-hmm. I know Leslie has one where she gets dropped on her butt and she's like, I don't know if that was a black thing or a lady thing, but I'm pissed.
Right.
Like, that's intersectional joke right there. And that has got these fucking alt-right MRA fucking dudes in a fucking tizzy. And it's just so ugly. And
well, it reminded me of what I've been fucking dealing with, too. Just watching her go through it, I've been like, well.
Are you prepared?
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted about it.
Finally. Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I tweeted about it today, so people will have seen it already. But I, you know, I've been working, as I mentioned on the show last week, on this stuff at my high school. And it's predictably working with white people has soured pretty quickly. And I have spent the last week being tone police and gaslit and openly attacked in this group of women that I volunteered my time and expertise for free. And it's been really just like gross and like really ugly and so, you know, unnecessary, but so fucking predictable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all like literally it was like a textbook, just, you know, first, you know, once I did all the work, right, and got all of this accolades and everything was going great, then it was like, well, now we don't want you representing us. And it starts super innocently. First, they start asking about the work I did and decisions that were made to achieve the goals that they set out for, which I achieved all of them in 1 week. And then it didn't take too long before comments like this. Okay, Leslie Mack, please let us know before you speak to the media. I personally don't like your tonality and gruffness.
And why is she the spokesperson of the whole group?
She isn't. She's just one white bitch that thinks she can tell me what to do. Like, I work for her.
You know, and that's the, like, there's a couple of things that, there's a lot. The whole fucking thing's disgusting, and it's painful. But you gave up working for Black Liberation.
Yep.
There are groups that you work with and for that use your talents and acumen for your people's liberation.
Yeah.
And you had to tell them no.
I did. I was like, I need to take some time off because I have to put some energy into this thing right now.
And so you've given up your work and passion.
I mean, not all of it, but some. Yeah.
And taking this on gratis. There's no money at all. No one's paying anything.
Nope.
You succeed wildly.
Yeah.
Right? As a group, before you're doing anything, before you've taken any sort of like organizing position, when it's a loose collective, there was a consensus for 3 objectives and goals. And I'm not saying this because you're my wife, just purely objective. Like, you kind of fucking crushed them. Like, these are the 3 things we want you to do. Home run, home run, home run.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Like, I'm not like, so it's just, it's so fucking it's so obviously anti-black. And the thing that breaks my heart was when you said that you knew this was coming and you saw it coming and you were waiting for it. And it just was a matter, if it wasn't here at this time, it would have been something else.
Oh yeah.
And the trigger in this instance was a single post, that, you know, basically was this
me doing the job they asked me to do.
But the way you did it, I know all these folks read it. This uppity black woman ain't going to tell me what to do.
Yeah. Actually, I wasn't telling them what to do. I was asking them to do something.
But that was the turning point. That to them was a, we got to knock you down now.
It just was like, you know, everything. First, it was, you know, the interview was a problem that I had set up and three of us did. And then when it was pointed out that two other people did the same things I did, then it was, well, we're upset that any media was done at all. But you said you needed a media person. So did you think that you needed a media person to not do media? Then when it's pointed out why we needed all the media and why it was a good choice, because, you know, it accomplished all the goals you had, then literally, and I'll quote, this isn't about media being done. It's about who's representing us in the media.
And there it is. We don't like
when folks balked about that. Then it became, I use an emoji. Many people are put off by me. This morning, though, took the fucking cake, because this morning, because all of those things are ridiculous. The problem is a post on my personal Facebook page about why I don't like being told that I'm well spoken at 40 years old.
It's just fucking ridiculous. It's such, there's, what's the cycle we say? First, there's the accosting, that we accost you, right? Call you, you know, say you're doing this thing. You have a shadow agenda. They use the word shadow
agenda.
Yeah,
I'm gonna mention all the buzzwords. The dog whistles that they use.
So first we as white people, we accost you, and then we deny your agency, right? You know, it's not that, you're taking it the wrong way, you didn't mean that, I don't like your tone, blah, 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 blah. Then we gaslight you, right? All these things. And then you're a trope, right? Now you're the fucking angry black woman, and we can't work with it. It's just so fucking ugly.
It's so ugly. And it's like, you know, that quote, shout out to Papa Pope from Scandal, you know, you have to be twice as good to get half as far. But honestly, for a black woman, I don't even think
there's nothing you could have done.
There's no winning. And I really, like, this is why I've been kind of like deep in thought about it. And you've been like, what do you want to talk about? I'm like, because I'm not ready to talk about it. Because I've kind of been trying to wrap my head around it and actually trying to see my way through it. And there isn't really a way. And that's the conclusion I came to, because the better we do, black women, the more people steal our ideas, take credit for our work, devalue our contributions, and seek to take away our power. Literally, the better we do, the more that's what we face. The more we stand up for ourselves, the more they blame us for discourse, gaslight us and pretend that nothing's happening, and infantilize us. There is no winning. There's no winning response to this bullshit. Some of the words that were used, I said gruff, boorish, bullying, difficult, having a shadow agenda. These were all phrases that were used to describe me. Now, I'll mention all of this in the context of literally the two things I did was I put a website up so people could sign this letter. I put together this radio interview that went extremely well and created talking points for other people to do press. That's it.
Yeah, and the goals were, I'm not going to say the goals, but if I'm not mistaken, like, based on the work you've done, from that, members of the board used back channels to try and reach out. High-profile alumna, you know, like senators, reached out. So it wasn't like, you know, like when I say it was a home run, it was like fucking home run. Like the things you needed to come at this institution all happened because of the work you did.
Yeah.
Every fucking one of them. I'm sorry it's been...
So then you're left with like what the choices are. So you can walk away, right, from the work.
Yep.
Right. And a cause that I believe in.
And after having done all the work.
Yeah. AKA the racist one.
Yeah.
I can stay and spend half my time defending myself.
And fighting with.
AKA the racist win. The third is to ignore them and just be constantly attacked while trying to do the work. AKA the racist win. There's literally no way they don't win. And the reason why is because people allow them to do these things without checking them, without calling them on their shit, without literally saying, I don't give a fuck what you claim you're saying. I see you, I hear you, and you're fuck shit. And nobody and does it.
That's why I kept asking if you had any, I don't say allies, but, you know, support, in particular white folk that could be, you know, white women. There's like, hey, listen, this is
But it shouldn't
crazy.
Be. Here's the thing. The scale should be tipped in my favor.
Absolutely. And especially for the work you
and
did.
And that's the problem with the entire thing.
Yeah, and you hit it on the head. The better you do, the more an affront that is to the supremacist thinking.
Like, how dare my uppity black ass have something to teach them?
Yeah.
How dare I, you know, sound so amazing on the radio? How dare I do my job, effectively?
When it starts with, because you're black and I know nothing of you, I immediately think you can't possibly do this well. You can't possibly know what you're doing. You can't possibly be well-spoken. All these things you can't be. And then you start doing those. You start flaunting those, those fucked up opinions and biases and implicit bullshit on its head, right? You turn all that shit on its head and it just like, it's like a fucking, like a circuit breaks. Burt, beep, burt, burt, beep, burt. Anti-blackness can't compute. Beep, burt, 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 burt. Must be racist.
It's just crazy. So, anyways, that fuck shit's going on.
I am sorry. That's been some really horrible shit.
Yeah.
And it's not lighter.
And the thing that struck me about it was the fact that I am doing this work with other people and none of them are having to deal with this. And it's been so specifically targeted at me. And I was thinking about that about Leslie, that all the rest of her coworkers, you know, they get to go home to their families and they get to star in this movie and whatever happens with the movie. And on top of all that same shit that she has to do, she also has to deal with this crap.
Yeah, let's fucking like make sure, like this was on CNN and I quote tweeted it, but like her sin, Leslie Jones, like all this racist filth, was starring in a $42 million weekend blockbuster. Like,
the better we do, the more we get attacked. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we still only got this audio bit. Maybe somebody out there can make me one. That's a shout out to you, Chonilla. Mm-hmm. You're good with those little sound bites.
Oh, we have to just get
banana. This week in hashtags. And this first one, big shout out to my fave, Ijeoma Aluo. She this morning woke up after, I'm sure, hearing all the racist filth at the GOP convention yesterday, including Steve King. Rep Steve King. Oh, my God, Rep Steve King. Like, I really thought the overt, like, really stupid, like, really, like, literally dumbest and dumb racist shit. Like, I was, I don't want to say shocked, but I was like, wait a minute. You're saying what? That's on camera at a interview at on the dais at the convention? What? Like, unbelievable shit. So Ijeoma said, hey, let's all decide. Let's all, you know, do a hashtag. And she put it up, less racist than Steve King. And she had a bunch of great tweets that, if I can, I should pull it up here. But it got trending for a little bit, which was wonderful. And in fact, it was trending so well that somebody at, I think, The Daily Show, or not The Daily Show, who's the, Jon Stewart, said, if you don't know what's going on and what's this hashtag less racist than Steve King, here's, you know, here's why. And they had a little bit of breakdown. So big shout out to Ijeoma. We love you. And I think she's acerbic, witty, and incomparable. And I love the intersection she uses of wit and humor and just like her writing clapback pen is just like,
yeah, she's
it needs to be like ensconced in like clapback
like
heaven or something.
She's talented at everything.
Yeah, though. Just
she's
super
like an
talented.
Amazing artist. She's an amazing everything.
Yeah, but there's the using those skills to do the work she's doing in the way she's doing it to highlight stuff like Rep Steve King being super racist is just beautiful to me. I love it. Absolutely love it. So shout out to Ijeoma.
Shout out. The next two are movement related. So the first one is MLK Sit-In. And you can actually follow that also on Twitter at MLK Sit-In. You can look at it on Facebook and you can go to the website, MLKSitIn.com. But Feminisha Jones and I are lead organizers for a large national action on Sunday, July 31st at or on MLK Jr. boulevards, streets, avenues, parks all over the country. I think we have like 100 or so people that have already stepped forward to plan something in their community, and you can join us too. We really, this isn't about specific organizations or specific networks. We really are looking for regular people who want to get their feet wet in organizing and create a really connecting, healing, and wonderful community space on that day. So check that out.
And so I had a discussion on one. Congratulations. I think it's wonderful that you and Feminista are doing this, and I think it's great that you're working together again. And I saw a tweet. She said, name five people you want to be with when the revolution hits, and you were one of her five. And
she's,
I think that's
definitely one of
awesome.
My five. So
one of the questions, we had this discussion on my time about white folk at Black Lives Matter protests and actions, and, you know, there was a conclusion that someone made that, you know, there's really no reason for you to be there unless you're asked to be there, unless you're needed to be there as a white person for, you know, de-escalating police shield type stuff, you know, whatever it is. If you're asked, by all means. But if you're not asked, you know, maybe don't just show up and carry a sign. So for the benefit of my white folks, the MLK sit-in, is this something that is being specifically, you know, for and centering black folk? Are you looking only for black organizers?
No, we are looking for any organizers.
Okay.
You can be of any persuasion. The questions on the organizer questionnaire they're really good. But yeah, there's no...
Okay.
And I think, you know, we'll be centering blackness because we're black, and we'll be centering black joy in particular. So yes and no. And I would probably estimate probably 85 to 90% of the organizers will be black. But
okay. And white folk are, if they wanted to participate, does each individual have their own Facebook page?
We are just literally, the site went up today. So you're asking some very advanced questions.
Thank you.
But yes, you'll be able to see it on the website. We'll have a page there that will list all the different locations that are holding it. And again, that hashtag MLK sit-in. So you'll see like MLK sit-in Boston, MLK sit-in Philly, like that kind of thing, as well with hashtags. And of course, on Ferguson Response.
Okay. And maybe this is inappropriate, but can we talk about what's going on here? Are we doing anything here?
I don't know yet.
You can't be the organizer here.
No, I can't.
Because you're doing the national
stuff.
Correct. What would you like and need from me?
I don't know. We can talk about it.
Okay. And you'd let me know if you want me to support you and your organizing efforts nationally, or if I'm free to do something here locally.
I might want to do something here locally, but we can talk about it. I was going to talk to some other people.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to be in charge, but
I was going to talk to T's cousin, and I was going to talk to Ryan's aunt as well.
Yeah, we've got both the park and then another thing I want to. Yeah.
Yeah. So, right. Anyways.
Bada boom.
Yeah. So, the other one is Freedom Now, which is going to be this Thursday, the 21st. You can go to freedomnow.movementforblacklives.org, and it's a huge call to action nationwide that you'll be seeing lots of folks having actions that day. I'm really excited to just, we haven't had a large movement wide, national wide direct action day in a long time. So, check that out. Hashtag
awesome.
Freedom Now.
Awesome. And that from the Movement Pro guys, if I'm not mistaken, they've got over 100,000 people that have signed the
pledge.
The
yeah.
Pledge.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's been doing really well.
So this could have gone under the, like, we had
it could have gone so many places, truth be told.
But listen, the GOP clown car has evolved because now it's like just a clown.
Right.
But what has transpired in Cleveland at the RNC?
Lord, it's a clown car.
Jesus, it's a clown explosion.
Yeah,
it's
really like is. We'll play it now and we'll go through all this shit right
okay,
now.
Okay, well, let me get my.
Do, 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 do. Dominoes, eat me.
So, that might be way too obscure for a lot of people, but that's my new GOP music.
That was Daryl Hammond as Donald Trump on SNL. It's one of my favorites.
And Stacey Hedger doing the Cantina band scene on her trumpet.
Oh, Lord, her trumpet, yes.
Stacey and her trumpet.
So actually, I'm going to go through this Paul Ryan edition of the GOP clown car real quick because he's a fucking idiot, and then we can get back to the
let's do it.
The RNC.
I knew the one thing. There's more than one thing?
Oh, yes, there's two things. So the first thing is that Paul Ryan... Cleveland, RNC. Again, he's the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, yeah.
So
high-ranking.
The top high-ranking
GOP.
He's the man. took a terrible towel from the Green Bay Packers.
No, Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
They're like literally like Cleveland and Pittsburgh are in the same division. Huge rivalries. They're like century old rival. They literally played each other like 80, 90 times. They kick each other's
Packers
ass all the time.
From,
yeah, it's just it was like I don't know what happened to end up you being handed a Pittsburgh terrible towel and wave at Cleveland, but like somebody does not like you. They really like. You have a chief of staff that's like, I fucking hate this Paul Ryan dude. Give him a terrible towel.
Literally.
I don't know how that happens. Like, how does that happen?
You lost, dude.
It's like, it's so funny because it's like the moment that they were trying to craft is like, I'm athletic and sporty. I'm a regular NFL Joe, just like you. Crack open a Budweiser. Yay.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. That's from Pittsburgh? Bloop.
Yeah. So the second is a selfie that he posted on the Instagram, the gram, if you will.
Oh, no.
Says, I think this sets a record for the most number of hashtag Capitol Hill interns in a single selfie. Hashtag speaker selfie. So he took a selfie with all of the GOP summer interns.
I've seen this. I don't even know what you're going to, but I've seen this picture. It is the
It's the whitest picture I've ever seen in my entire life.
When I saw this, I was gonna fucking quote tweet it and said, I see zero black people. I was like, you know what? I'm not even gonna bother. It's so obvious. It's glaring. It's
glaring.
Somebody
photoshopped his face on everybody's took his face, and so they were all Paul Ryan's, and it's so white already. I didn't notice. They were like, oh, who did this? And I was like, oh, I've seen that picture. And I was like, oh, wait, something's a little different about it. They're all Paul Ryan. That's how fucking white it is. I didn't even goddamn notice. So GQ put out an exclusive roster of all of Paul Ryan's summer interns. Some choice names on here. Muffy Grant.
Are these real?
No, they're not.
Oh, okay.
Kip Trivialton.
So honestly, like, I could literally
top or low.
Just stop for a second, because you're reading my high school yearbook. I don't like it. Like, I literally went to. I'm not even kidding. I went to a school with a Buffy, a Muffy, a Trip.
I know.
Literally, Buffy, Muffy, and Trip were kids I went to high school with.
Bethy Macbeth. Hannah Hambleton. Tegan, spelled two different ways. Britt Van Eisen. Rhodey Crenshaw. These are all hilarious. Toys R Us. That's one of them. Mm-hmm. Finn. Mm-hmm. Marbles SodaStream. Honestly, this is too funny. Fry McMillionaire. Mm-hmm.
Stop.
It's really funny.
Paul Ryan.
Whittington Yale.
What a fucking dumbass, dude.
Lee Sachs Von Sachs. Anyways.
So we don't have to get totally into the broker convention mess. It was a fuck show.
Shit show.
We listened to a bit of it, but so we've already talked about Paul Ryan. We're going to get into. We skipped over Melania Trump, right? We need to talk about that. We need to spend some time on that. The Colorado delegates walking out, right? There's like, fuck it, we're out. Utah
deuces.
Out. The Women for Trump event that nobody showed up to.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of horrible shit. Fucking Trump's cavalcade got in a car accident on the way to the fucking thing. Like, literally got in a car accident on the way to the convention. They had Scott Baio up there saying "Make America America Again." I mean, it's like, it was so bad. It was just so bad. So the piece that I think I'd like to talk a little bit about with you is this notion of in the room where it happens, right?
Yes.
So we saw Hamilton, and there's a great song from the book, and there's a really wonderful piece about wanting, and it's Burr, who's kind of like second banana to Hamilton his whole life, and he wants to be in the room where it happens. And what he's talking about is like, you know, two or three dudes go in at this, literally at a constitutional Congress, and when they come out, there's a new fucking president and decision and all this shit. And it's like, well, who was in that room? What happened? Three dudes made that decision? Literally, in Hamilton, they talk about three dudes in a room making it happen and Burr wanting to be in the room when it happens, right?
Yep.
So we're listening to the GOP fuck show as it's happening live. And as best I can tell, I don't know all the different processes and parliamentary procedures and shit. But as best I can tell, in order to not have Trump, in order to have somebody other than Trump, I think the decision was hopefully Ted Cruz, a conservative bloc, a Tea Party bloc of people, were going to do some sort of brokering of the convention by demanding a some sort of roll call by doing this like thing, right? And I gather there's a minimum number of delegates that you have to have signed on, right? You can't just like up and say two people are like, fuck it, I'm brokering the convention. You need like a quorum to say this is what we're doing. And they had that. They had that, okay? And at some point, the RNC and Trump's folks literally, like honest to God, like twisted an arm and got three people to change their agreement to broker, and those three people no longer met this quorum, so this roll call vote didn't happen. That was the last gasp effort to Never Trump, right?
Yes, the Never Trump.
And you know, right away you said it, we both said it, right? It's like, fuck, three people. And I said that we did on the John the story about this school in Peking, not Peking, in it was in Illinois, Peoria, Illinois, and it was a sister city to Peking, and their athletic team forever and ever ever was a epithet offensive to Chinese individuals, like well into the 80s, right? Like forever, that was the name of their fucking like team mascot, right?
Yep.
And nobody wanted to do anything. Somebody got hired at like a superintendent level, one person, and was just like, I'm changing it. This is no longer acceptable. This is ridiculous. This is even a debate. Overnight, I'm sending them. Literally, people came into school the next day and like, hey, the billboard's got a new name on it. Yep. Like one person can make a difference. So here, there were three people that could have made a difference, right? I don't know if Ted Cruz is a better difference, but they could have made a difference. And there was a room. And something happened. It was probably an exchange of money, right? But literally, we go to Hamilton, and they're singing about three people in a room making it happen. And here, live at the RNC, three fucking people, you know, didn't make it happen.
Mm-mm.
And I guarantee it was money. Guarantee they got paid.
Of course.
There was fucking
hand off
of cash.
I literally was like, so you can't just like hold the people? That's all you had to do?
Well, no, you were worse. You said, listen, first of all y'all GOP fuckers are using black fucking liberation tactics.
After 3 years of complaining about us.
Get a job. Oh, wait a minute. We're going to use that same thing at our fucking convention. Get a job.
Roll call. Fuck you. You know what? Let's stop talking about these assholes.
No, but what's better is you said that literally if it was like the lack of organizing acumen, like, listen, if your quorum requires X number of people, you know the fucking 10 fuckers that are about to bounce. You know the 10 most fucking vulnerable
people.
And
if you don't, you shouldn't even be doing this shit anyway.
And you know what you do? You get them 10 fucking people in a room and you lock it. It's like, go get like, Jim Bob bitches. And Bill and fucking all these people are going to fucking roll over and get paid by Trumpelstiltskin. Fucking lock them in the bathroom. Like, sit on them, literally. It's like all you had to do. What was it, 2 hours, 3 hours? Hold them in a fucking closet. Okay, you're mad at me. Tough.
Ridiculous.
So we do want to talk about Melania.
Well, obviously, Melania plagiarized Michelle Obama last night during the GOP convention, during her big speech.
Really
obscenely. Like, it was just ridiculous. I'm not even going to play it because you guys can listen to it.
No, you don't need to.
Whatever you want.
You know, the thing that I wanted to talk about is, so last night when it happened, and right away, like within an hour, there was like side-by-side comparisons, like word for word, right? Like, it's not just a little bad. It's like really bad. Like,
it's horrible.
The actual order and sentence and flow of concept and actual words is just way too close, right? So you're like, well, how are they going to spin this? Like, what's the spin? Like, how do you fucking spin this? Like, you said that last night. I was like, I don't know, but we're going to find out. Like, they're going to have to spin it. Like, there's no other choice they have. So this morning, I saw the spin machine working, and it was really just like, I don't call it like lazy. It was just like the saddest attempt at spin. So it started with, first, she didn't plagiarize Michelle. These are Michelle plagiarized from some other speech many, many years ago, right? So the first attempt was, well, we plagiarized Michelle, but Michelle plagiarized first. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like, well, we stole this from you, but you stole it too, so fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, it's like that doesn't really work.
We stole it, so you stole it, so everybody stole it.
And that was debunked. Michelle did not lift her speech. So that
of course.
Spin one. Total
first of all,
shit.
First of all, I know she didn't lift her speech because if she ever did some shit like that, you all would still be talking about that shit fucking today for the end of time.
Thank you. She's a plagiarizer.
She plagiarized
plagiarizing
it.
FLOTUS. So
out of here.
So that was attempt one. Attempt two then was, well, these are common words and she just used common words. You know, common words. Really common words. That's all. And it's like,
common words.
Come on, really? That's what you're going to go with? Mm-hmm. Come on. So then their final jab in this regard was to blame Hillary and to say that it was crooked Hillary and her agenda and making Melania look bad.
Mm.
Despite her never opening her mouth once the whole time. Despite your speech being fucking like...
Word for word.
Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. I don't understand how your spin is, she stole two. These are just common words. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton's a bad person.
Yeah.
What? Like, you just like, your spin was the sky is green and the fucking grass is on fire? I can't understand. Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
That was really
at all.
Bizarre. That doesn't,
so bizarre.
That doesn't work. It doesn't work like that. So right away, Twitter, which is want to, and I love Twitter for this, came up with the hashtag famous Melania Trump quotes. And there were some doozies. Yes. It was really fun.
So I won't read everybody's. I'll just read mine that I liked and I didn't. The best one for sure was, I'm just here so I don't get fined, because I feel like it could be really true. Like, she really could just be like, I'm just here so I don't get fined. I don't know what fines he'd levy against her, but somehow I figured out that
it involves his tiny hands on a penis.
Yeah. hearkening back to Hamilton, I said, I'm just like my country, young, scrappy, and hungry. Famous Melania Trump quotes. And then I just did a whole bunch of like crazy ones, like, I'm all the way up. Yeah, yeah. Blame it on the goose. Got me feeling loose. And of course, World Star, because we all know that's how Melania talks. Anyways, I thought it was really hilarious. Check it out. Check out Jesse Williams in particular, because he really went in. It's fucking hilarious. My favorite thing is this is the senior communications advisor's response this morning. Okay. In writing her beautiful speech, Melania's team of writers took notes on her life's inspirations and in some instances included fragments that reflected her own thinking. Melania's immigrant experience and love for America shone through in her speech, which made it such a success. It's like they're fucking delusional, dude.
You know, and not only are they trying to say that made it such a success, like, honestly, I don't know what your people and team think, but for most of the rest of the world, that's not just a mistake. That's a, like, it's beyond egregious. It's like, I just don't know how that happens on this stage. Like, that just tells you how fucking stupid that literally the team that got in an accident on the way in fucking lifted a fucking speech from 8 years ago. Just good cripes. That is just not a good. These are not my kind of white people.
Yes, it's really definitely bad. So that's it for that for now.
Yeah.
And then we of course have the big story of the week.
Yeah, of course we got receipts.
We got receipts. We got receipts.
Oh yeah.
We got receipts.
And you know, that's a double doozy.
White people.
Yep.
I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
White people.
God damn it.
Fucking white people.
Yeah, frequently these go either apologies in white people and receipts and white people go hand in hand.
Yes, they do. So Kim Kardashian, Kim Ye, if you will, Kim and Kanye. Just did a fucking full blow knockout to Taylor Swift this weekend in their ongoing saga over his controversial song A Famous, where he mentions having sex in abstract with one Taylor Swift and also talks about making her famous and so on and so forth.
And just because it's germane to her issue is his phrasing is, I made that bitch famous, right?
Yes.
He had sex with her and then he made that bitch famous.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the song came out. Well, does everybody need that whole background, you think? The song
just came out. Real briefly. The song comes out. Taylor goes all shitty about it and really went like on an offensive. This is terrible. He didn't ask me. He didn't get my permission. Really like saying some shit. And Kanye is basically like, that's not true. You know, whatever, whatever. And he gets a little emotional, right? I think he got at a red carpet event. There was a mic that picked him up clapping back a little bit at Taylor, right? Mm-hmm. That's basically the backstory. Yeah. And up until, I would say, 48 hours ago, the general consensus was, you know, I don't know, these two have a lot of problems. They've had issues in the past. You know, Kanye's rushed the stage. I'm not really sure. The assumptive, I think, is anti-black. And, you know, Taylor's white woman. She's, you know, she's probably, you know, oh, Kanye did this to her again.
Like, well, really, I think that assumptive has been he's a, you know, misogynistic asshole and he's a bully. And, you know, he did it to her again. That's been, that's her narrative. That's everybody's fucking narrative.
Yeah, I would say that's the narrative. And then at the best for Kanye was like, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe he did something. Like, there wasn't anybody that's like, Kanye's clean. I don't think. That wasn't any assumptive narrative. So, what happened 48 hours ago?
Yeah, so 48 hours ago, and this whole time, Kim and Kanye have been like, but we called her. That's been their story this whole time, that we called her, we called her, we called her. So, Kim Kardashian, on her show, Keeping Up with the Kardashians on E! Entertainment Network, this Sunday, did an entire episode really built around putting Taylor in her fucking place and calling her out for being a liar. And I was struck by not only the brilliance of the takedown, but just how nuanced it was. So she timed the, they said all, the last thing that they said was that they, you know, Kim Ye, that is, they were like, we told her, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Kanye had this outburst. And then since then, it's been pretty fucking quiet from their end of things, just like whatever.
Totally.
And you'd have thought it was over. I'm sure Taylor did.
She hoped.
Although I did see some information now that leads me to believe she didn't think that. But here we go. So she does this show. She has a whole hour-long show. I say there were about five scenes throughout the entire episode that focused on this issue with Taylor. The song being made, her lying about it, Kanye being upset, what they were going to do, blah, 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 blah. And then as soon as the show goes off, Kim Snapchats a recording of the conversation of Taylor and Kanye talking about the song, him rapping it to her, them talking about it, her saying she loves it. She's totally fine with it. Thanks for calling her. We're going to be such good friends, blah, 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 blah. And then obviously we know what happened after that. Now, a few things. One is watching the episode and then seeing the aftermath of it, it just really showed me that Kim and Kanye really were made for each other. Truly, truly, truly. Master media manipulators. I thought it was probably one of the most brilliant PR strategies played out in real time that I've ever seen. Really, really, truly amazing.
I would say, and I think that Kim gets a negative. There's a lot of stuff that gets thrown at her, and because she's a woman, all kinds of stuff. In every instance, there's never any acknowledgement or acceptance that she's a fucking media, fucking brilliant, fucking genius, man. Mm-hmm. Like these women, like Chris and all the way down, the Kardashian girls, they know what the fuck they're doing. They are leveraging celebrity and brand in a way that we've never seen.
Never.
And you and I talked about her and Kanye's relationship. It almost seems like Kim has a level of celebrity that Kanye wants. It's celebrity for the celebrity's sake. Whereas Kanye has celebrity for his music. It feels like he wants something more. He wants celebrity for celebrity's sake.
I think he wants a recognition of his genius. And I think he's,
it's
just
beyond
all
music.
Conjecture.
Yeah.
Like, he wants it bigger than that. But
well, anyway, whatever it feels like, sometimes he's looking for, I think Kim has in fucking just, you know, coming out the fucking eyeballs, right? And so they're a really great pair. And one of the things you told me about the show, because I didn't see it, you were telling me about like how it went down and this and
that.
Yeah,
so there was a scene where, you know, it comes out that they have the recording of Kanye clapping back, as you mentioned earlier, and her publicist or PR people call and like, somebody has a recording, it's going to get out. And she calls Kanye, they're on the phone, she's on speaker talking to him, and she's like, you know, somebody has a recording of it, you sound really angry. And Kanye goes, I don't care, right? Just like that. And he goes, well, you know, you're better at this stuff than me, I'll defer to you, so tell me what we should do, right? She goes, okay, let me talk to the team and I'll get back to you. She hangs the phone up and she turns to Chloe, who's sitting there with her, and she goes, don't you think I need to think smarter for him? Because he'll always say he doesn't care. And Chloe goes, yeah, definitely. And then she goes, wife of Pablo. And Kim goes, yep, wife of Pablo. And then she gets on the phone and blah, blah, blah. So the plan obviously was shut the fuck up. Don't say shit. Let this bitch run her mouth. We'll put an entire fucking hour long episode so you can tell your story to the audience over and over and over and over again. And then once it goes off the air, drop that shit right on the internet and just blow her entire spot up.
Yeah. And even in the Kardashian show, she was saying that, you know, she was there for this conversation.
Yeah.
Right? She heard the conversation. Yeah. So one, she knows it's truthful. Two, that this actually happened, right? Or one, it happened. But she says Kanye records everything. When he's in the studio, he has a film and video and audio crew running 24 hours because he wants to be able to have, like, you know, in case there's making of or
behind the scenes, whatever.
Or what if he does something brilliant and genius and forgets?
Right.
You want to have all that shit recorded. You're in a studio. That's what you do. You fucking record that shit, mm-hmm. right? Like, literally. So it wasn't that he was trying to secretly fucking get Taylor. He didn't make this recording like, ooh, I'm going to fucking drop the bomb on you later, because he never did. He didn't even think about it. He was just like, I'm fucking mad. I know I spoke to you. This is bullshit. It took, you know, because he's angry, took wife of Pablo to kind of say, let me talk to my team, do it this way. And on the show, she's like, oh, yeah, he records that shit. He records everything. So now it's like, oh, just ducks are fucking, dominoes are falling, just lining them up. And I thought it was probably the most brilliant receipt takedown I've ever seen. And I think for me, sort of the like summation of all of that, I think I see with Kanye and Taylor, and I see with Melania and Michelle Obama, is this just protecting of white women at all costs?
Oh, yeah.
That white women are just...
And I think that's why their play was so specific and so brilliant. Because if you recall what happened with her and Nicki Minaj, she really was out of pocket.
Yeah, what's good? What's yeah?
That was Miley, but she came really, like, Taylor was way out of pocket because she wasn't even talking to her. And why are you getting involved in this, right? So that was the first thing. And I think looking at how people treat her informed the team and certainly Kim and Kanye as to how they needed to play this, especially when there's been this, like, Kanye's bullying her. And, you know, Taylor, that's all she does is play the fucking victim. She's been 14 for, like, 35 years. So... anyways, that was hilarious, and kudos to all of them. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, there's a someone I follow on Twitter. I won't use their handle or name, but had some just, you know, these are big, high-profile public incidences of this protecting white women at all costs kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so this follower and friend on Twitter went through something just, you know, a microcosm of this shit, and it just played out so ugly. She's at work, you know, in a retail establishment, and is at a cash whatever and has a trainee there, and one of the little price things didn't work, and they said something about, oh, we'll just, you know, go swap out the guns, like the little price gun. And the white customer makes a comment about guns and about like says something about we and guns in a way that was like, not this black person, right? Like used we in a like wink wink nod way, white people, and like dog whistle a little bit about guns, right? And the person was like, yo, that's not cool at all. Like, what are you doing? Like, I'm working. Like, you don't fucking, like, that's like a death threat. Like, you don't like wink, wink, nod, wad, make comments about fucking guns and shit. Like, what is that? Like, that's, it didn't play well for this person. They make a comment and it's that instant awkward white woman's like, no, I didn't mean it that way. You're being insensitive and you're blobbity, bibbity, boo, moo. And a person of color that was the manager kind of has the employees back and is like, listen, you know, customer, you're wrong. This isn't how it goes. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. And I know you know, but guess what happened after that?
What?
Oh, come on. You know the next play. What'd white woman do?
Oh, they're attacking me.
Yeah. She called corporate.
Ugh.
She went higher up the food chain.
Of course she did.
You know, the black cashier, you know, didn't like my dog whistle bullshit and got lippy with me. The black manager fucking backed up the black cashier. It's a black thing, black and black. And I'm a white person. I'm protected at all costs. And, you know, and I hope there isn't reprimands for this individual. But it's kind of blowing up their job. And it's like, this is their fucking job.
Right.
This is their fucking job.
Right.
This is where they go to fucking have a living.
Right.
And this fucking white person came in and just made some fuck ass comment, then got their fucking feelings hurt. And because of that is now making this person's living hell at a job. It's just, and it's literally like what we're seeing with this protecting white women and Taylor and the Michelle and Melania. That's a big picture stuff. These little interactions happen fucking a billion times a day. And that's the kind of shit what you're talking about where white people don't speak up, right? Don't say anything. I don't know what would have happened, but imagine in that store, in that same scenario, 2-3 white people come over and say, you know what? I'm agreeing. You, the customer, that's really insensitive. I can't believe you said that. I'm going to call corporate.
Right.
I'm going to call corporate right. and let them know that you were the fucking out-of-pocket one.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that that's like going to solve the thing, but that interaction might have been a little different. Might have been a little different. But right. they all sit there quiet and, oh, even though this horrible fucking, I call it a flash of racism, right? There's like, poof, racism happens. And we white people just fucking like, ah, oh my God. And in fact, I was talking again on the timeline today with someone about the like, you know, should they go to, as a white person, should they go to protest action or not? And I was talking about, you know, if you're invited, if you're needed, if there's supplies, there's all these different things you can do. And the person got real jazzed and was like, all right, I'm gonna go talk to my HR department right now about how we can increase diversity here. And went and did it. I was like, well, that's – I said, that's great. You took action. You did something. And right away I said, yeah, but it's probably not going to do anything. It's not – it wasn't that big a deal. And I was like, hold up. You know, what you just did, that's the thing.
Right.
Like you honestly didn't think you talking to the HR department about diversity was going to end racism in your office, did you? Like that wasn't the – you didn't think that was going to be the outcome, right? Like right. you knew this wasn't going to be like, aha, Drew talked about diversity and it's all solved now. Like we know that's not the case. So if that's not the case, what did you think was going to happen? Like, I don't know what you thought was going to happen, but doing the thing, that's the thing. Like now you're exercising that muscle. You can take action. And if you're in this grocery store and you see this fuck ass shit, you're not going to have that when the flash of racism happens, you're not going to be like paralyzed. You have to practice. You have to flex that muscle. You have to lean into the discomfort and do it again and again and again and again. Wash, nice. Rinse, repeat. And then as you get better at it, you get more comfortable. You get, you know, you stop fucking up nearly as much. And then when something really happens, and maybe you can save a life. Maybe you can save a person's life by acting at the right time in the right place without that pause, without that, oh, shit, what am I going to do? And you're never going to be able to do it unless you keep doing shit. That pause will always paralyze you until you fucking do something like 50 times, 100 times.
Mm-hmm. Now, here is one like quick little extra layer to the Taylor Kimye controversy. According to TMZ, who, as you know, I trust implicitly.
It used to be a joke until like literally like they've been the lead on like every almost celebrity everything. Death, every celebrity fucking everything. They're the first to break everything.
Everything. So they said Taylor Swift threatened Kanye West with criminal prosecution months ago for secretly recording her phone conversation with him, TMZ has learned. TMZ has a copy of a letter Taylor's lawyer sent to Kanye's attorney back in February. The lawyer made it clear under California law, anyone who secretly records a telephone conversation with someone in the state commits a criminal offense and it's a felony. A source with direct knowledge of the conversation told TMZ it was recorded in an LA area studio. The letter threatens, quote, demand is hereby made that you immediately destroy all such recordings, provide us of assurance that this has been done, and also assurance that these recordings have not been previously disseminated. Finally, Taylor has the right to file a lawsuit against Kim and Kanye for violating the law. Stay tuned.
Yo, seriously, dude, like honest to fucking God, that means
she knew this whole fucking time.
She's saying he fucking never told me. He never told me while she's fucking suing to fucking suppress a goddamn audio tape. That is some fucking dirty fucking white fucking just, you know that t-shirt, white people are sick of white people's bullshit? That's the bullshit.
Yeah.
That's the fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, you just, you know you're dirty and you fucking think you can get away with it and it doesn't fucking matter because they're fucking black and you can fucking do all this fucking horseshit. And I guarantee you she's sitting there fucking boo-hooing about her being the victim. He's attacking me.
It wasn't character assassination when you lied about him
and said
he didn't call you?
Fuck, man. And just... You know
if
what?
You were just pissed about him saying the word bitch, then that's what you should have said. If that's what you were pissed about, then that should have been what your bullshit ass speech at the Grammys was about too. Yes. Not about somebody taking your shine and pretending like you didn't know all this time that's what he was going to be talking about. You fucking tried to use him and he's doing it back to you and you deserve a bitch. How about that?
This is for you, Taylor.
My name is Classic with an I and a little dick hanging off the C that bends around and f*** the L out of the A-S-S.
Okay, Classic. You know, this has been a good episode, but I feel like I can't without... I need a palate cleanser.
We don't have any stories for that, though.
I know, but I need a...
Hello.
You know, while we let that play in the background, speaking of Black Enough, so Hall & Oates, like, I love them. I really do. But they'd be playing some black music, right?
Yeah, they're Blue Eyed Soul. Blue Eyed Soul. Blue Eyed Soul. That's the whole thing.
So, and they know it.
Sure.
Daryl ain't. You watch Daryl's house? It has
a lot of black people
musicians.
Up and through. That's
Trust.
What he do.
He knows his fucking wheelhouse. Yet his audience is whiter than white.
So white.
So white. So we're at the show, and it's just literally like all white. Mm-hmm. But his opening acts were Trombone Shorty and Sharon Jones and the Daft Kings. It was like, yo, dude, you just got like the blackest opening acts for Hall & Oates at this giant like white concert venue.
Yep, pretty much.
And but Trombone Shorty, he fucking blew
it. Yeah, he was fucking amazing.
He did a circular breathing solo that went on for a good minute and a half that was just phenomenal.
It was nutty. It was really good.
Nutty. Mm-hmm. Really good.
So good.
Anyway, I just had to get a little more in there. All right.
All right. I think that's it for this week.
You want to talk about any movies or nothing?
I don't have any movies to talk about. I feel like we haven't been watching anything. We've been like traveling. We've been like doing all. I'm so behind. I haven't even watched the last episode of 12 Monkeys yet. I'm so behind on everything. Although I will say that new show on Netflix with Winona Ryder in it, what's it called? Stranger Things, I think it's called, or Strange Things. I watched the pilot the other night and I stopped because you're going to want to watch it. So we'll watch it together from moving forward. But highly recommend it. It's like the Goonies meets E.T. It's a like 80s throwback vibe and it's kind of this like sci-fi storyline. It's really good.
Okay.
I'm excited for it.
We talked about it earlier.
Yeah, ring it. Hey.
This is the last 3 minutes. You know, I had, I think it was Adisa's Faith and Zoe. Maybe it was the that other family that calls me Uncle Drew. That's not really our nieces. But they're all in the car, and they were playing the extended version. And I was using the horn to do the ring part. Yeah. Boo.
Oh, yeah. I think it was the other family, because I remember Jordan was, like, all excited about his little crazy self. The kid is hilarious. I think that's it, though.
All right. Let me. Oh, I'm behind on my.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you.
I know.
Mess.
Oh, shit. Wait. Still playing Ring My Bell.
Ring My Bell.
In the background.
Good night, everybody.
High five.